Eliapologist.
Chair.
Yes, Honourable Minister.
Chair, I would like to apologize because I must go and attend the National Coronavirus Council. Deputy Minister will lead our delegation. But before I go, I just want to address the matter of documentation before the committee. So when you are ready, you could give me a chance to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we first adopt the agenda for the meeting? I'm sure all of us will received it.
Chairperson.
Honorable Singh.
Yeah, good morning to you and good morning to honorable members, minister, deputy minister and officials. Chairperson, I think in item 1.2, I think the minister has just touched on a matter now. We just received correspondence a few minutes ago from the department. But perhaps our agenda item should be consideration and adoption of minutes and matters arising. Because what the minister is going to talk about is a Daily Maverick article which will be arising. So perhaps we must have matters arising.
So you propose an adoption of the agenda?
Yes, I propose adoption.
With those matters, yeah, in that order. Yes, any second, huh? Honorable members, anybody wants to second?
Honorable Brian, second.
Yes, thank you very much. I assume the agenda adopted. Can we then start with the first item? The first item would be the adoption of the minutes of the last meeting of the 16th of February. I assume we have read them, but I will still allow page by page if there are any corrections. Page one. In fact, I don't, in the screen, I might be saying page one and
there's
no page one. But in the meantime, let's say page one. Page two, I might even say three when there's no three. Tanta is delaying. But honorable members, if there's anything in the minutes, because I want them and I assume all of us, if there's anything in whatever page, we can raise that correction.
Chairperson, it's Honourable Bryan's here. May I just raise on page three at the bottom of the page, it notes Honourable Bryan's abstained on behalf of his party. If possible, can we just reflect that it was myself, Councillor Phillips, and myself, Honourable Phillips, and Honourable Weber, who all abstained from the committee. Thank you.
Noted. Any other? And can we adopt the minutes or let's discuss matters arising. let's get to matters arising from the
I
minutes.
Move for adoption first, Jefferson.
Oh, okay.
I move for adoption of the minutes.
Yes. Any second?
I move for second minutes. Okay. Thank you very much.
Now let's get to matters arising. As suggested, 1.2 talks to the concern that was raised and that would want to discuss before the minister. Subsequent to, as a follow-up to that, we wrote to the minister. And the minister responded. So that is the letter that has just been sent to you
So that's the content of what she might want to talk to. But we'll allow her to, because she is here. Honorable Minister, the letter has been, because it was a decision of the meeting that we must follow up on this. We didn't want to discuss an unstructured discussion. So your response has been sent to them. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to members of the committee. Chair, let me at the outset apologize, as I have done in the letter, for the unfortunate incident which occurred on Tuesday last week. There might be a reason why it happened, but I don't think that honourable members want to hear reasons. I think what they want to hear is solutions. And I think that we do recognise that there have been ongoing difficulties with regard to receipt of documentation in the committee. Myself and the Deputy Minister have discussed this matter together with our newly appointed Director General, and we've agreed that it is completely unacceptable that committee members do not receive documentation in good time, because it obviously interferes with your ability to prepare for the committee meetings, and we know that many of these documents are information heavy. We have agreed that we will restructure our own internal deadlines so that documentation is put before myself and the Deputy Minister for approval in good time, so that in future the committee must receive documentation on the Friday before the committee meeting on the Tuesday. We have also made it very clear to our parliamentary liaison officers that if this process is not adhered to, there will be consequence management. So, Chair, I will appreciate that as soon as there are difficulties, you will let me know immediately, and there will be consequences for not delivering documentation to you by Friday before the Portfolio Committee. I hope that colleagues will give us an opportunity to put the wrong right, and that is all I wish to say. Thank you very much, Chair.
That's the apology, honorable members. Any hand or any comments? If I see your hand, I'll note it. I see face, honorable Brian. Oh, you have raised
your hand. Thank you, Jefferson. I'd just like to say on behalf of our caucus, thank you to the minister for the apology and for the proactive measures that she's implemented, and we're hopeful that going forward that documentation will be received on time so that we can all apply our minds. So thanks for the positive step from our side.
Honourable Brustin.
No, thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Bryant has covered me in that respect, and thank you, Minister, for that response. And I wonder, Honourable Chairperson, if as a matter arising, the minister could respond on the Daily Maverick allegations, the article, while we are at it. Thank you.
Yes, honorable minister, are you able to deal with that?
Yes, honorable chair. Thank you,
Maverick.
Thank you very much, Anthing, for raising this issue. I think colleagues were in the Portfolio Committee when the Auditor General gave this report, and I think that at that time I did indicate that it is disgraceful that our department should have this level of irregular, unauthorised and frivolous and wasteful expenditure. Subsequent, I have written to the head of department and also to the chairpersons of the board of all entities
and I have instructed them that they need, as a matter of urgency, to implement the necessary regulatory processes to investigate this expenditure, to take appropriate consequence management, and ultimately to approach National Treasury for condemnation where this is an appropriate remedial measure. What I can share with you, Honourable Singh, is that last night I received an update from the Director General on progress. So the first thing that we know is of the irregular expenditure, 2.5 billion rand is irregular expenditure from previous financial years. And you have served on this committee for a long time, and I think you are fully aware that we come as far back 4 years of qualified audits, and in fact a disclaimer. Now, the financial officer was appointed by myself early last year. I instructed him to clean up. Fortunately, Honourable Singh, you know that the only way out is through. And what it means is that you have to go back through all your contracts and you have to declare all of your irregular expenditure. And we have declared to the Auditor General 2.5 billion rand of irregular expenditure, which we are all agreed comes from previous years but was reported in this audit year. What has now happened, and this is in line with the regulatory environment, is that the CFO, together with internal audit, are doing an analysis of all of that irregular expenditure. You would know that the irregular expenditure is plus minus 300 million that falls under the Waste Bureau. That irregular expenditure we have already investigated. We have laid criminal charges. We have six officials that are facing serious disciplinary charges. And we have also issued letters for further consequence management processes to another 70 officials. So that process is in process. What I'm now dealing with is the 2.5 billion. The Director General has put out a tender for an independent investigating company. And once the internal audit indicates to us which aspects of this irregular expenditure need to be investigated in line with the regulatory precepts, we will put that in process. I want to assure the committee that we will have no hesitation dealing with this matter as firmly as it needs to be. One of the reasons that Ms. Munumfo Chabalala was appointed as the Director General of this department was because one had an understanding that when it comes to scientific and environmental skill, our department is extremely blessed. When it comes to governance and financial management, our department needs help. And that is why one appointed somebody with the grant that she has, because we believe that unless you follow the money, you are not going to have a proper outcome. So this is work in progress. I look forward to being able to update the Portfolio Committee on a regular basis on progress in relation to consequence management. And I thank you very much, Honourable, for raising this matter this morning and for giving me this opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I assume that then we are clarified. I think we discussed the matter as well in
assistance and indicating that there are particular challenges which have come from the
department will be on top of getting answers to us and getting reports to us on time will apply there as well. So I trust that that would happen there when you know, possibly NGOs or anybody write into the department to query certain aspects. Thank you.
Honorable Bryant.
Thank you, Chairperson. Again, echo many of the comments of Honourable Singh. I've just got one very, very brief question for the Minister, and that's just in terms of this, the tender that's been put out on the investor.
Does she have any idea of when that process is due to be concluded and when they anticipate that investigator to be appointed?
Yes,
Honourable
Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honourable Singh, with regard to the issue you raised, there was this Daily Maverick article where I think it's a number of non-governmental organisations, particularly in the animal rights space, have been in contest with the Department over access to certain information. Honourable Singh, I am the appeal authority in those instances. So there have been two instances where I have overruled the decision of the department officials. I don't want to comment on other cases because my duty is to look at appeals and complaints with a fresh mind, taking all issues into consideration. What we can share with the committee through a formal process is what prior requests there have been, what has been the response of the department, and if there has been an appeal to the minister, what has been a response. And I think that that would be the correct way to deal with that matter, because I don't want in this forum to be behaving in a way that would be irresponsible in relation to my statutory responsibilities. So I would prefer that we don't generalize about the matter. I would prefer we deal with the specifics of each case. And if the chairperson so directs me, we can bring that information to the portfolio committee. Honourable Bryant, the Director General has said to me that she expects to conclude this tender process for the appointment of the investigative company in March. She is in this meeting. I think that she can, if she has additional information, she can share it with you. This would be, procurement would be a matter in her domain. Let me defer to the DG, Chair.
Yes. DG?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honourable members. As already highlighted by the minister in terms of briefing that I gave her, the process of putting together a panel of investigators for the department is already ongoing. So we are now at evaluation stages. So that tender, when I then started in the department, had already closed. It's now at evaluation stages, and we are looking at it being concluded by end of March. And as the minister has highlighted, those signs of fraud and other wrongdoings are definitely then going to be subjected through then service providers that we would have secured in the panel of investigators. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think we can move now. These were matters arising from the minutes. Unless there's, I don't see any hand. Can we now move to the next item, which is briefing by the department? Minister, I think we are releasing you, left with the Deputy Minister. If there are any comments you want to make, Deputy Minister, to introduce your team, that will be dealing with the item, or any comments you want to make, so that you can feel that the department is led. Honorable Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and morning to all honorable members and the department officials. I'm sorry that I had to join late. I was under the impression that we are only joining at 20 past 9. Then I was alerted by my office that you have already started with the minister. And I'm not sure which areas that the minister then cover. But from myself, Chair, I would like to say that with regard to the presentation that you have requested department to come and meet yourself, which was supposed to have been presented to yourself a week ago, I would like then to give to our DG so that she can just give the person who's supposed to take us through the presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.
DG? Chairperson, in the absence of the DG, I don't know what happened to the DG, because she's supposed to be here. I was not told that she was going to be part of this meeting after the minister has left. But as per your program, Chairperson, I think I can then give over to DDG responsible for BNC to just take us through, and then also assign the person who's supposed to take us through the pouching presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. We have three areas in particular that but four areas in particular that we'll be dealing with. One part of that would deal with the actual poaching aspect, which the department will do through the relevant branch. It could be Isham or Francis that will be taking us through. After that, then Sunparks will follow on the three items that will focus on rhino and also elephant, as well as the wildlife economy, as the portfolio committee has requested. So we'll start with this one by the department, that Francis or Isham, on this first one, if we can go ahead. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, excuse me.
Honorable Paulson.
No, it's fine, Chairperson. It's just that DG was struggling to rejoin the meeting, so she's rejoined now. It's fine.
Oh. Okay.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. But I just find out if you can hear me.
Yes, we can. Again,
thank you. Good morning. My name is Frances. Thank you. Good morning. My name is Frances Craigie. I'm the Chief Director for Sector Enforcement in the department, and I will take us through this particular presentation. As the committee requested, we're going to try in this presentation to cover the main affected species, give you some statistics over five-year period, also touch on law enforcement efforts and successes and challenges. Towards the end of the presentation, I will then hand over to Dr. Sam Ferreira just to talk to the committee a little bit about the actual number of rhino within the Kruger National Park. So if you can move to the next slide, this just gives you an outline of those aspects that I will be covering. And you can see there in terms of role players, I think we're going to focus a little bit on the Environmental Management Inspectorate, looking then at the coordinating forums and structures that are in place and how we do that work. As I then said, the affected species, with emphasis on the main ones that we're dealing with. We obviously realize there is poaching of other species, but we've given you statistics around the main issues that we face as South Africa. Currently, I will then go into challenges and then concluding with areas we will be focusing on in the 21-22 financial year. So as you can see, there is quite a complex involvement within the wildlife law enforcement chain. So there's a number of agencies and institutions that are involved, all the way from surveillance and protection of the species through to how we detect, how we catch the people, how we do crime scene investigation, and then obviously the consequences through to court, and there's a number of players there. So as the national department, we do have a very small complement of environmental managed inspectors, and then we're also responsible for coordinating the MIs or the green scorpions across the country, and I'll touch a little bit on that in the next few slides. Then, of course, you have the national and provincial parks authorities. There's the provincial conservation and environment departments where they are also EMI situated. And then, of course, there's the security cluster players. So from the African Police Service, there's numerous units within the police that are responsible to assist with wildlife crime, from the stock theft and endangered species unit through to the hawks, as well as the crime scene management, LCRC, border policing, and ORS is involved to an extent, as is crime intelligence. So there's numerous staff officials. Then FSA does become involved where we're dealing with a national security risk. SARS Customs works with us in terms of particularly, export and import and illegal trafficking of species. The SANDF is in particularly where we're talking borderline issues. And then, of course, there's the private landowners. A significant number of animals are actually in the hands of private ownership. And so we need to work very closely with the game farms and the private owners as well. SAPS Forensic Science Laboratory, a lot of issues around DNA. And genetics, and so we have SANBI gets involved, and I can talk a little bit more to that, as well as GL, the Veterinary Genetics Laboratory, when it comes to rhino. And then, of course, there's the Department of Justice players, the National Prosecuting Authority, the Assets Forfeiture Unit, and then the Financial Intelligence Center, as we're moving now towards doing a lot more investigations around money laundering and following the financial flows. The FIC has really started to get involved in the wildlife trafficking aspect. If you move to the next slide, I thought I'd just spend a little bit of time on the Environmental Management Inspectorate, or the Green Scorpion, as that is our law enforcement officials that sit within the environmental and conservation sector. And you can see that we are a network of enforcement officials across spheres of government. We have a standardized identity, powers, and training is done at a kind of uniform national level by our department, and we are responsible as EMIs for compliance monitoring and enforcement, with many of our EMIs having powers in Term Criminal Procedure Act as well. And so although there is a distinctive national identity, national profile, it is important to remember that these EMIs do sit within the different provinces, and in fact there's some EMIs also within the local authority. So if you look at the next slide, that just gives you a sense of what that network looks like, where we deal with the brown, green, and blue issues. So it's not just about wildlife. It is also about pollution and waste and EIA issues. It is also about marine-related issues and the ocean and coastal issues. You can move to the next slide, which kind of just shows you a bit of a complicated web of all the different departments that I spoke about, and as we as DEF then do the coordination through Working Group 4 to ensure codes of conduct are met, to ensure the EMI manual is implemented, and also to ensure training is done for those. The next slide just gives you a sense of the provincial authorities and obviously the national parks, Sandy and Isimangaliso, where we do have EMIs situated. And I'll give you on the next slide a sense of how many EMIs there are across the country. So you can move to the next slide, and there you'll see the number currently is approximately 3,058. It is important to remember that quite a number of them, about 400 or so, are local authority EMIs. And then you've also got a substantial number of those EMIs that are grade 5 ranger EMIs. So all our rangers are also designated as EMIs. And so there's quite a small number of EMIs that are actually dealing with the work outside of the rangers and the local authority EMIs to deal with all the other blue, brown, and green aspects. And so it's quite critical that particularly when it comes to poaching of wildlife and wildlife crime, that we collaborate very closely with the South African Police Service, as they have capacity to deal with quite a lot of the aspects. So, you know, we jointly work with them on cases, but there are certain other cases that we as EMIs would work on independently. There's also overlapping mandates, obviously, and police are responsible for all crime across the country. And if we don't tackle this issue holistically and in an integrated manner, including the private sector, we're not going to be able to deal with this issue effectively. So if you move to the next slide, this really shows you the collaborative or coordinating forums and structures that are in place. From a NatJoints and ProvJoints perspective, we do have a priority committee specifically focused on wildlife trafficking. This was set up in about 2013, 2014, as the rhino poaching really started increasing. The actual NatJoints, the priority committee at a national level, has unfortunately not been sitting as regularly as it should have been. There was a general who was chairing that priority committee, who was redeployed into another province. And I've recently had meetings in January with management, and we are resuscitating that priority committee as a co-chair from DEF and a co-chair from SAFS. And so we're really hoping to get that working again effectively. Within the prog joints, those structures do seem to exist, but I think, you know, we need to be giving them more direction in terms of focused reporting that needs to come back at a national level. Within the environment sector, MINTEC Working Group 4 is the working group that deals with all compliance and enforcement aspects. And under that working group, we have a National Biodiversity Investigators Forum, which is a very active forum. This is where all the investigators across the country dealing with wildlife, stock theft and endangered species, hawks, the NPA, and ourselves sit 4 times a year and actually discuss cases that are on the go, challenges, what we need to do in order to address those, sharing of information, etc. And then the other subcommittee of Working Group 4 is the Rhino Lab Anti-Poaching Committee, which focuses more on the actual anti-poaching and strengthening of the anti-poaching structures within the parks, linkages into the different reserves, and also the private sector sits on that anti-poaching committee as well. We then have the EMI SAP Standard Operating Procedure, very important document placed since 2009, which is the document that indicates how we work with SAPs and particularly how the EMIs would carry certain green dockets or let's say non-organized crime-related dockets. Then there's the collaboration with Justice, where we do a training for prosecutors and awareness raising with SAJE, the South African Judicial Education Institute, with magistrates. You can move to the next slide. I wanted to touch very briefly on issues related to coordinating forums, region, internationally. We know that a lot of poaching happens in South Africa, but South Africa is often not the destination country for these species or specimens. And so we really have over the years strengthened a lot of our coordinating forums regionally. Within the African Union, there is a specific strategy on poaching, as well as at a SADC level. So you can see the SADC LEAP law enforcement and anti-poaching strategy is in place and is in the process of being renewed currently. A new strategy will be coming out. There is always an aspect around the policing forums. So SARPCO, for instance, is a static policing forum, and what happens within those policing and security forums versus what happens within the environmental forums. And we've been working quite hard to try and bring those two together so that, you know, we're integrating the work of the security and the environmental conservation arms of those different structures. Internationally, we also do a lot of work with our partners within Interpol. We have for many years Wildlife Crime Working Group. We have an ongoing project around reptiles. There's a number of issues within South Africa around poaching or illegal harvesting of reptiles and trafficking of them, and there's a big international project around that with Interpol. CITES Secretariat, I work very closely with them, as well as with the World Customs Organization and the UN Office on Drugs and Crime. So there's a lot of donor funding that is given to many of these organizations to really bring together different countries, including South Africa, to work on these aspects. If you move to the next slide, then I think just to get into the crux of the issues and what are the main species that we're finding being poached within South Africa. And I will touch on the main issues, which won't be a surprise. First of all, elephants. I think we always do deal with that. Just understanding both from an illegal killing perspective as well as ivory. So this slide specifically talks to the illegal killing of elephants. It is obviously for the ivory, where the demand is coming from Asia, especially China. And while a lot of the other African countries' populations are already being quite hard, such to effectively combat the threat, if you have a look at the numbers. So you'll see that the highest number was in 2018, where it was mainly within the Kruger National Park, with one being poached, KZN as well. This came down in 2019 and then down further in 2020 with 16 elephants being killed illegally in the park. I think what is a little bit concerning is that we haven't actually had anyone charged, arrested or prosecuted for poaching of elephants. It's very difficult to trace the poachers once they leave the park, and there haven't been any successful investigations in relation to any of these poaching incidents. If we move to the next slide, just having a look at seizure of ivory within South Africa, you can see there the numbers. We're just waiting. We don't think there was any perhaps two seizures in 2020. We're just trying to get those final figures through from the Hawks. But at the moment, you know, there have been a couple of successful cases that have been prosecuted, and we just try to give the committee a bit of a sense of what the outcomes of some of those cases are. So you'll see within Limpopo, you know, there's various outcomes we get, sometimes in the form of fines, sometimes in the form of actual imprisonment. It just tends to vary. But, you know, we pretty, 2020 didn't see a big increase in ivory. I think for this current 2021, we've had about three or four tusks that have been seized this financial year. So we keep track of that, and that needs to be reported through to the CITES Secretariat. We then move to the next slide, dealing with specifically lions. You'll see that mostly they are killed for traditional medicine purposes. And again, it is the East Asian countries where the demand is. In addition to traditional medicine, there is also a demand for teeth and claws of lions. The smuggling has been detected on occasion. We haven't seen a detection recently. And the animals do primarily come from breeding facilities. We haven't actually picked up in any of the illegally trapped bones, wild lion bones that have come from an illegally killed lion. And you can see the statistics then there over time from 2016 through 2020. And again, it's the Stock Theft and Endangered Species Unit of SAPS that generally deals with these lion cases. Again, we've tried to show just a couple of successfully prosecuted cases. In Limpopo, you could see 8 years imprisonment. And then in the Free State, you had certain fines issued, with some of that being paid over to the Criminal Asset Recovery Fund. You can move to the next slide. With regard to leopard, I think the there are two challenges that we find and reasons for poaching or illegal killing of leopard in South Africa. The one is linked to the demand for leopard skins. They are mainly used within cultural or religious ceremonies, and they are illegally killed and imported, and we do pick up a few leopard skins within traditional markets here within South Africa, such as in Durban, Faraday Market within Johannesburg. And there is a project that, you know, we really need to start raising awareness around this issue. As DEF, we have had a number of projects. We have gone into those markets. We've done awareness with the traditional leaders within those areas. But I think more may need to be done. There's also been a specific project, an NGO, that tried to promote the use of fake skins. But this doesn't seem to be having an end on that. And I think where this is also coming is many of our neighboring countries are also picking up the killing of leopards, and that seems to come through into South Africa. The other issues with leopard is more illegal offtake. So many farmers' leopards are damage-causing animals, and unfortunately then without a permit, go out and kill those animals. And track them, and so there have been a couple of cases that we've picked up around that, although there are farmers that do also let us know what is happening, and you can see there in terms of cases successfully prosecuted in relation to some of the leopard-related cases. Then moving on to the next slide, I thought we should just also deal with pangolin issues. Although we don't see a lot of poaching of pangolin in terms of illegal killing of the animals, we do see illegal harvesting where we actually pick up live pangolin trying to be sold. And that's, so it's more the illegal trade rather than the poaching or the killing of the animals. We don't pick up a lot of illegal trade in the scales, but you can see in terms of Gauteng and Popo, that is where we're picking up the biggest challenges. There's been a lot of successful cases in terms of enforcement operations, and we really do keep track of what is happening with the pangolins. If you move to the next slide, that will give you a sense of the kind of cases and successes that we've had around pangolin. There's been very good collaboration between ourselves, the prosecuting authority, the Hawks and Doxets. And as I said, we also have very good aggravating evidence that gets led in court. And so you can see there in terms of the Gauteng case, direct imprisonment of 7 years, and also in terms of some of the Limpopo cases, we're getting very good sentences in relation to that. You can move to the next slide then. I think before we get on to aspects related to rhino, we just thought we would also raise a new emerging threat. And I think many times when we talk about poaching, we only think about animals. And we are seeing within South Africa a very concerning increase in terms of the illegal harvesting or poaching of succulent plants, particularly within the Northern Cape and the Western Cape. And you can see some of the statistics that have come through from SAT between 2018 and 2020. As well as both in the Northern Cape and Malmesbury in the Western Cape. Cape Nature has also had several seizures of succulents during 2020. And we see South African as well as international citizens that are coming through into South Africa and knowing where to actually take these plants out of the wild and leaving South Africa with them, either on their bodies or through courier or mail center. And so here are a couple of outcomes of cases. You can see the numbers of plants that are being taken, many conophytum plants, as well as other succulents. But we are generally seeing the courts giving fines in these cases rather than direct imprisonment. Where there is imprisonment sentences, that they are generally being suspended at this stage. If you move to the next slide, you can then see another case where we dealt with Korean nationals. That previous case was Czech nationals. In this particular case, which got quite a lot of media attention, the two Korean nationals were arrested with 2008 plants on them, and you can get a sense of the age of these plants. You know, it was a significant number of plants, and if you move to the next slide, and that will give you a sense of the kind of cumulative age of the different plants that were involved. There were charges around the illegal picking and possession of the flora, and you can see there's 6 years direct imprisonment, but again, that was suspended for 5 years, with one of those accused actually being sent back to Korea, and the other one being rearrested in January of 2020, and extradition hearing in July last year, and he'll be extradited to the USA, where he had already been arrested and fled via Mexico, and for exactly the same type of offense in the US. You can move to the next slide. I think getting onto the rhino issues, just to give the committee a sense of where we've come from and where we're heading. You would have seen that recently we released the 2020 rhino poaching statistics, which was 394. And we are starting to see now a decline over the last 6 years. A lot of hard work goes into these numbers, but I think at least it's a positive sign in terms of the fact that some of our strategies are really having at least an element of success in terms of bringing the number of rhino down. If you move to the next slide, we just get into a little bit more of the detail of the 2020 statistics. So you can see a breakdown of that 394 across the different months during 2020. And I think everybody would know from the media releases and from previous conversations around this, that particularly during the hard lockdown months of April and May, we saw a significant decrease with the movement of people being restricted. It made it very easy to make sure that, you know, people couldn't move between provinces and move into the parks to poach. And so we saw a significant decrease in those months. But then unfortunately, to make up for that time, you can see the poachers really increased their efforts within November and December. On the right side, you can then also see the statistics of 247 of those being poached within the Kruger National Park. Two of those, 247, were in Marikele, and then with KZN being the next highest, and as it goes down into northwest Limpopo and Mpumalanga. Also see a breakdown between the state protected areas, 360, and then 34 rhino were poached on private properties. The next slide also just gives you that breakdown of the private and the state, but then across the different provinces. So you can see in terms of our tactics and strategy within, for example, Limpopo, it needs to be focused in on the private reserves because that is where most of the poaching is happening, whereas in other areas, for example, KZN, most of the poaching is happening on state reserves, and therefore our efforts and resources need to focus on that. And again, this slide just shows the difference over time from 2016 to 2020, the difference between the private and state. You can move to the next slide then. Just going into the number of arrests in South Africa related to rhino poaching. Again, these are numbers that need to come through to us from SAPS. SAPS is the institution that carries all of the rhino dockets. So back in 2014, when the priority committee was set up, although prior to that, some EF had been carrying dockets related to rhino issues, there was a decision at that point, due to the significant increase in arrests, that the police would carry those dockets. Initially, that was the Hawks and just the detective units within the police stations, but then that moved into an increase in the capacity of the stock theft unit, and the stock theft unit then became the stock theft and endangered species unit. And so the detectives within that unit now are primarily responsible for carrying the dockets, particularly around poaching incidents. Trafficking will still be done by the Hawks, but I think it is quite important to understand that this information sits with the police. Then moving to the next slide. We also asked the National Prosecuting Authority that keeps the information around the conviction rhino cases to also provide us with some information that we could report through to the Portfolio Committee. And they gave us the statistics from 2016 until 2020. And you can see there in terms of the 233 cases, there was a 95.5% conviction rate, with 362 accused being involved in those cases. And I think where we do get convictions, we do get some very good outcomes. Over the years, there have been some challenges in some of the courts, for example, in Limpopo, but we are generally seeing evidence is provided. There's some good outcomes, usually direct imprisonment for various periods of time. Often there's illegal firearms charges in addition to the illegal killing charges. And so, you know, you can see 37 years imprisonment down in terms of the last bullet, the Ndlovu case in the Eastern Cape, which was also well publicized. And you can see there were significant years of imprisonment given for 55 charges in that particular case. If you can move to the next slide, then this really just gives you a sense of, again, where we've come from in terms of the different strategies and approaches that we've taken. So from 2008, we had that increase in poaching of rhino. Our first strategy then that was still driven by the department in 2010, where we really started putting pressure in terms of getting the rhino poaching as a national priority, trying to put in place a countering strategy. In 2011, it was then declared a priority crime, and a priority committee was set up, and obviously initially it focused on only rhino poaching, and then as I said earlier, in about 2014, it then moved across to focus more broadly on wildlife trafficking as well. In 2014, we also had the Cabinet adopting the Strategic Integrated Management Approach, which is still being implemented by us, which focuses in on certain enforcement aspects, but it also goes into issues related to biological management. It looks at issues around community interventions, and it looks at a range of issues to try and counter rhino poaching. And we have presented to the Committee on the Strategy on a number of occasions. In 2015, it then prioritized as a national security threat. And then we then started working in 2016 on the National Integrated Strategy to Combat Wildlife Trafficking. It was also developed in response to certain recommendations at the time that came out of the Committee of Inquiry, where we were looking into whether to put forward a proposal for trade at CITES COP. And in 2016, while we were developing that National Integrated Strategy, we also had the Rhino Conservation Lab. And I'll talk a little bit more to that lab. You can move to the next slide, which really shows the breakdown of the Rhino Conservation Lab. Oh, sorry, looks like that slide was removed. So I think in terms of the Rhino Conservation Lab, as I said, we looked at various things from security and enforcement all the way to biological management, and they'll talk a little bit about that when Sandpox does their presentation, as well as the economic issues, again, around the wildlife economy, which will be spoken to in a little while. So when it comes to the security and enforcement part of the Rhino Lab, there were a number of initiatives that we needed to implement. You saw on the previous slide, we've been doing a lot of work around technology, increasing the use of technology, increasing the capability of the Rhino Anti-Poaching Unit, and using different platforms in order to re-improve our effectiveness around doing anti-poaching. This is the National Integrated Strategy to Combat Wildlife Trafficking. Again, I spoke to that briefly. There's three broad outcomes, and although the strategy is still awaiting approval by Cabinet, we took it through the security cluster again last year. It went into the JCPS cluster for recommendation in August of 2020, and it is being taken through to Cabinet this year. We are already, and I think it's important to note that we are already implementing parts of the strategy. The Cabinet had approved the principles and these three broad objectives of the strategy, and so there's a number of initiatives within the strategy that are being implemented through the NBIS and the RAP committee at the moment. You can move to the next slide. Uh, These are the work streams that I spoke about of the Rhino Conservation Lab, with the security, anti-poaching and anti-trafficking, community empowerment, demand management. We also looked at our legislation and made certain amendments to that as a result of that. And then, as I said, the management of the rhino populations. Again, I'm not going to speak to that. That'll be dealt with a little bit later. The next slide then shows you the breakdown of the security and anti-poaching and anti-trafficking initiatives that came out of the Rhino Lab and through the RAP committee. We are in the process of implementing those at various stages. You'll see there's quite a bit of work around range of qualifications. We have now worked with a QCPO to approve the curriculum. We're looking at allowances and benchmarks and salaries of rangers. We're looking at how do we source further equipment for them through a new project, which is our JET 7 project, which will be coming up now in 21-22. We're also looking at rolling out integrity mint. We pulled together various policies that the different reserves now use around that. And then JET 6 is another project where we're really looking at community rangers and through the environmental monitor program, how do we ensure that these monitors are placed in strategic areas and within the communities and reserves. There's many of these. I can probably spend hours in talking about how we've managed to implement many of these initiatives, and it is ongoing. The rollout of EMOR, for example, the operating platform at a national scale, is happening through the committee. And then you can see as A22 is the work of the security cluster. So how we as the environmental cluster and the priority committee work together with the security cluster in terms of the national integrated strategy. You can move to the next slide. This is part of one of the biggest initiatives we're busy with as part of the RAP committee at the moment, and I thought I'll just spend a little bit of time on it. We've established what we call Environmental Enforcement Fusion Center within the Enforcement Directorate at DEF. And what this has allowed us to do is really bring in additional capacity, particularly around analysis of information. So we now have a team of 5 analysts, and we link in to the different nerve centers within the different parks, within the different provinces, as well as linking into the new project with PPF called the Integrated Wildlife Zones. It allows for a lot of the analysis to happen within the fusion center, and then the support of the analysts assists the police investigating officers, targeting suspects, understanding the syndicates, but also assisting us in terms of management information as well, feeding up to the RAP committee and to the investigators forum. Also through the Fusion Center, we are dealing with a lot of the donor-funded projects, so where there is funding to assist with anti-poaching capabilities, where there's further investigative support coming through from some projects, where there's funding to help, for example, with connectivity in certain parks, with helicopter airtime in certain parks, all of that is filtering through the fusion centre so that we can ensure a uniformity and a consolidation of the effort that is happening. And obviously then that flows out into various outputs such as tactical management and crime information. It helps us to brief each other. It helps us to come to these committees. And so I think that EEFC is probably about 4 to 5 months old, and there's a lot of work that's going to happen to strengthen it even further in the next year. If you move to the next slide. This just gives you a sense. We wanted to just explain how it works from a national CMOR perspective. So CMOR is the operating platform that we use in most of the reserves, and we're rolling out as part of the Rhino Lab initiative. That is used, real-time information gets fed into the CMOR platform. That information is then enhanced by the analysts. It is moved in what we call our iBase, which is the information system, where all that information, whether it's suspect names, ID numbers, etc., that information gets fed through in there, and then it can help at a very tactical level. Where there, for example, poaching teams going close to specific reserves, that information can be fed directly through the nerve center. So a lot of the information flows from CMOR into the ISC. The analysis gets done, the product then gets approved, and that goes back into our planning and targeting for collection by the guys on the ground. You can move to the next slide. We thought we'll spend a little bit of time on the challenges. I think one of our biggest challenges, and particularly within the rhino space, is the recycling of criminals. So particularly when we're talking about repeat offenders that are being rearrested, there's a high number of arrests of suspects that get bail. And what we find is those same offenders go into another province and are caught poaching again. Processes. Some cases in the rhino space are more than 10 years old. I thought, let me quickly phone the Stock Theft and Endangered Species Unit this morning just to get a sense, particularly the unit sitting within the Kruger National Park, to get a sense from them how many cases are at various stages within the court process. And what I got back from them this morning is that there's about 144 cases that are pending, and that is just the Stock Theft Unit that works within Kakuza and obviously the southern part of the Kruger National Park. So of those 144 cases, you probably have about 3 suspects per case. So you've probably got about 430 suspects that are at various stages on the court roll currently. You know, when these cases go to trial, it's a very long process, particularly where there's lots of witnesses. And I think 2020 had a massive impact in terms of delays because of COVID. Prisoners were not transported to courts, courts closed. So I think the backlog is even more severe now as a result of what happened during last year. Many of those cases that I mentioned to you are sitting within the regional court as well. Then, of course, there is the issue around internal and staff involvement. You know, we do pick up, rangers that are possibly involved, police officials that are involved, and those are dealt with by the units. Within SAPS would generally investigate, and then there would also be the disciplinary processes that take place within the different institutions. The sustainability of the wildlife crime campaign, particularly in terms of protection of the species within the reserves themselves, is very costly. And as we continue to be hit by this issue, we will continue to have to find money in order to assist with that. Often the parks are situated in rural areas where poverty is very high, and so enforcement can be quite challenging in those environments, particularly where basic services and unemployment is also contributing to that criminality. And then if we look at the EMI institutions themselves, so the Parks Authority, for instance, particularly with the budget cuts that have come as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, you will see that their budgets have been cut considerably, and where there were insufficient resources before for protection, you're going to find that it's becoming even more of a significant issue now in terms of vehicles and funding for equipment, et cetera. In terms of the next slide, I'm just carrying on with a couple more challenges. Capacity is always an issue. You saw the number of EMIs across the country dealing with all of the blue, brown, and green aspects of compliance and enforcement. There is also issues around skill sets. We are working quite hard on a number of NGO projects. One is focused on mentoring. One is focused on really providing investigative support to the wildlife investigators within our institutions, to really up their ability and their expertise to deal with some of these more complex investigations. Vacancies, again, a problem where those get vacated and then are no longer funded. We're unfortunately dealing with a small number of officials having to deal with quite a large amount of work. Despite the different structures that are in place, as I said, there had been a challenge, particularly with a priority committee, which hopefully we have gotten through now. In some cases, we do still try and unblock some of the communication challenges within the different investigative units, even within SAPS itself. and sometimes be a challenge. And then, of course, the attention to this issue, and I think just to stop for a moment on this bullet, is that, you know, for us this is an extremely priority and it will remain a priority. However, to sometimes get some of the other institutions to continue to see it as a priority when they have so many other issues, you know, crime aspects that they have to deal with, you know, one needs to continually ensure consistency and attention to this issue. And then there is a lot of donor funding available. We do try and channel it through into various issues. We work closely with many of the NGOs to ensure that there is funding that comes available, that can really be used to help in areas where there are challenges and in areas that, you know, it'll really add to the initiatives that we're trying to do and build on. If you move to my slides, just to give you an indication of where we're going to be focusing in this current financial year, we'll obviously continue with implementing our Rhino Lab initiatives. I spoke about the integrated wildlife zones. We have now looked at where 80% of the rhino populations are within South Africa. We have demarcated those areas. And these, a lot of the donor projects are now focusing on really building up our capabilities within those integrated wildlife zones to really break down the barriers between the national park, the private reserves, to try and ensure that we are working much more effectively together and to really focus and target the resources in those areas where they really need it. We will hopefully get approval of the integrated strategy by Cabinet. I think we're really looking at identifying, as I said, we are already implementing some of the activities under that implementation plan, but the approval by Cabinet will really give us an opportunity to go back to the implementation plan, focus on those other institutions again, get their renewed commitment around the issue. We'll continue to support the Investigators Forum and the anti-poaching teams through our information management and the analysis capacity that I spoke about within the EEFC. And then the other really important project that we have just started with is the Rhino Research Project. We are working on this together with the NPA Research Unit. The MOU was signed last year and we're now in phase one of this project. And spend 1 minute on the objectives of that project. You know, there's some of the example. They will look at how many rhino cases have been registered, are pending, are finalized and withdrawn. They will compare the number of rhino poached to the number of cases that have been enrolled, as well as the number of arrests to the number of evictions. They will look at the average time for completion of rhino cases. So when you register the docket, how long does it take for that docket to get to a final court outcome? They'll obviously look at successful and unsuccessful cases and what are the reasons for those. We will also, through that project, look at the reporting structure within the NPA and within SAPS, particularly related to statistics. How do we improve the accuracy, the completeness, and how do we align the reporting structures between the different institutions? A review of legislation may have this research. They would also look at charge sheet sentences and compare what's happening within different provinces. They will look at the training of prosecutors and how well is that being done and what do we need to do further. And then looking at defined roles and responsibilities around reporting, as well as identifying levels of person convicted within the hierarchy of the syndicate. So there's some very important outcomes that are coming out of that Rhino Research Project, and we can hopefully keep the committee appraised of how that goes as they move into the next phases. The next bullet, how can we coordinate and accurately report on statistics that is linked to that project that I spoke about? And then, of course, looking at the need to strengthen our capability in relation to international investigations. We work, as Deb, very closely with the Hawks around the international issues. How do we ensure much speedier sharing of information between countries? How do we ensure more controlled delivery? So, for example, where there are seizures made at our ports, that's really good because it's stopping that illegal shipment from going out. But there are mechanisms that if you then allow that shipment to go, it allows
for the authorities on the other side to actually catch the people that are higher up in the syndicate in those countries, and how do we ensure we do that in a much more cohesive way? And then lastly, I think one of our big projects through Working Group 4 is to really strengthen our stockpile management for rhino horn and the compliance processes around that. We now have a new contract with VGL, the Veterinary Genetics Laboratory for Rhino DNA Analysis. That is the contract specifically for the stockpile DNA samples and the live rhino samples. So we'll continue to support VGL in that while the police continue to pay for the forensic analysis. But we will spend quite a bit of time and effort on really trying to support the provinces who are ultimately responsible to ensure better stockpile management. Thank you, committee. I think that is the end of my presentation. I think Dr. Sam Ferreira will just come in on the last few slides around the rhino numbers in the Kruger Park. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you, Frances. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Deputy Minister, members and other officials. I think Frances has given us a very good background on how we're responding to, the bad end of rhino things, when rhinos are dead. But the important is a little bit about how are we doing, and I think it is something that has been at the heart of many of us as we worried about the trends. What you see on the slide here are what the current status is in Kruger, and both the black and the white rhino were doing pretty well up to roughly about 2008, 2009, 2010, and then things started going down. And what you see on the right-hand side of those slides are what I call vital rates. So the dark orange is the natural death rates, the light orange is the sort of poach rates, and the green bars are actually the birth rates. And what is worrying is that if you just look at the white rhino one, for example, that the majority of the last bunch of years, the combined death rates and poach rates were actually exceeding whatever we were getting in terms of births. So I think that's a very important element. The guys are working hard, but we are not managing to getting these poaching rates down to low levels where the birds can do some work for us. Part of the reason of that is that we've had some birth disruptions, particularly the 2015-2016 drought, when during the drought period the natural deaths of rhinos nearly doubled. A rhino cow couldn't get in good enough body condition, and therefore she didn't conceive. So a year later, we didn't have very high birth rates. In fact, we had the lowest birth rate we've ever had in a long time. I think it was something like only 4%. And this additional consequence is all those cows that didn't give birth then conceived, and a year later have very high birth rates, and now those cows are actually busy sucking. So I wouldn't have had high birth rates as we saw this year again. So I think these are some of the things that are really important in understanding the complexities of the trends that we are seeing. The other element that I think also just want to highlight, because it's important, and this is the concept of a poaching compound effect. Many stakeholders ask us whether we record the fetuses, etc. It's actually very difficult to record that, because quite often by the time you get to a carcass, there are no fetuses, or it's been chewed up by us or something like that. But we have evaluated that effect, and on average, if you lose a cow, an adult cow in a population, you are also losing ultimately 5 additional rhinos. About half of those are the ones that are dependent on the calf, on the cow right now, either for suckling or for defense from other rhinos or lions or something like that. But it's a future loss that is really important. So for that reason, we often spend a lot of effort in trying to recover orphans. But most importantly is one has to think about how do you protect the females. They are more important than the males in a situation like we are now. So I think some of the key lessons here is that the impacts of several factors on the deaths and births could not offset the poaching rates combined with natural death rates that we observed certainly in the last 5 and 6 years. There are some indications that is about thinking about how you can invest in guarding rhinos. So this is probably a good example is that a cattle herder
spent time close to his herd and deal with a lion or jackal that's turning up at the herd, rather than just only chasing or looking for lions or jackals all over the place. And I think these kind of things may be very important to actually complement the initiatives that Francis has highlighted already. Can I go to the next slide, please? Just to put a perspective, Kruger dominates a great deal of how we see what's happening in rhinos in South Africa. If you look at our other national parks, we've got six other national parks that are home to two different subspecies of black rhino and one, and of course white rhino as well. And in fact, in these cases, they are actually doing very well. These species are growing about as good as what they can grow. And part of it may associate with the fact that these parks are relatively small, that allows efficiency, easier efficiency in how we have access control of people going into there, the integrity of our law enforcement, our rules, our staff, and of course also making it much easier to monitor rhinos. If you've got, you know, 300 rhinos versus 3,000 rhinos, it's much easier to actually get to see those 300 compared to 3,000 as an example. The next slide, please. Just to reiterate to the honorable members the importance of cows. We've had some evaluations which highlighted this compound effect. So if you lose a cow, yes, you lose a whole bunch of additional rhinos, but when they would have in future also, particularly if it was a female calf that you've lost, 4 or 5 years down the track, they would have started breeding and you've lost those ones as well. So we have done a number of interventions, some of them successful, some of them with limited success. So these include distracting tests, for example, by translocating sub-adult males away from where we have got a high number of cows in an attempt to try and get poachers to rather target those animals than the cows. We've done some dehorning, but in our case, we've actually, in a place like Kruger, we've dehorned only cows. And this has had some very interesting results that resulted in about 50% less poaching of cows compared to what you did before. So in that case, you're actually displacing the poaching pressure away from cows to bulls. The other thing is we've got explicit focused work on implementing veterinary care on injured and wounded cows. So some of you may be aware, for instance, that we've had a black rhino cow in our bomas here that we've been treating for about 2 years just to try and sort out their wounded foot. And then the other little bit I've already mentioned is rehabilitating orphans. We, on average, recover about 50% of orphan calves. So these are calves that are left over if mom is killed, not necessarily just by poachers, by something else as well. Often these calves are in such bad condition that of those that we do find, we actually have to euthanize about 20% because they're just simply beyond humane recovery. And then the survival rate of calves in the rehabilitation centers are pretty high at 85%. So overall, we managed to, through this process, actually wean about 35% of the orphan calves that get generated out in the field. The one thing that we haven't done a lot with, and that is actually releasing orphans back into the wild so that they can become part of the breeding population, and that's a next step of the evaluation. The one thing we do call for, and I just want to highlight the little points to the left at the bottom there of the diagram. You know, killing a female rhino is actually a more severe crime than killing a male, and it's got even some financial consequences. So there may be some sense to advocate for heavy emphasis for the killing of a rhino cow. The next slide, please. Francis has already highlighted some very important lessons that I think is very insightful for us. That happened through the year 2020 when South Africa had a whole range of different levels of lockdowns happening. In those periods that are circled in red there, those were the periods that we were more or less entirely in control of all the elements of an illegal supply chain. As Francis has highlighted, you know, you couldn't travel across borders or across provinces. We were implementing zero tolerance rules, for example, in Kruger National Park. Nobody could leave their houses or anything like that. And in periods, we used the results of the previous year's trends to say what would we've expected to happen. And it's nearly a 90% reduction in the number of carcasses that we actually observe compared to what previously happened. So I think this is a very important lesson, and perhaps we should ask ourselves, how do we recreate these things, of course, without having to do the kind of lockdown regulations that have done now in terms of our response. The next slide, please. There are some very harsh implications. I think we've heard already from Francis's work that we do agree that we need to deal more with the crime syndicates. Certainly the efforts in Kruger may also benefit from more national and international support, particularly around demand for the commodity. That is one of the purposes of the Rhino that came out of the Rhino Lab, which there are some interventions for. The poaching has got some very negative effect on ranger morale, burnout, trust, relations within and relations with neighbors. And certainly we need to think very differently about how do we build an ownership for field rangers rather than just having a field ranger having a perception I'm looking after Sandbox or South African rhinos. The expensive anti-poaching efforts are definitely also affecting other conservation work. So quite often the effort that the rangers have to put into the field means that they cannot spend time on doing some other aspects like, for example, check water and all these other sort of things. And I think the other key element that is facing us is that the various responses globally and nationally to the COVID-19 pandemic has certainly had an impact on budgets and operations over time. And even in cases where, for example, field rangers get ill and they can't go to work and they have to isolate and all these other aspects associated with the pandemic. Next slide, please. Well, that's it. I think so. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that's the end of our first presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think in terms of the agenda, we wanted all the presentations before we discuss. Is that how we understand it?
Chairperson, Honourable Brian, can I raise a point?
Yeah, I see your hand.
Thank you, Chairperson. My only concern, Chairperson, is that there's a substantial amount of information just in the first presentation, and I know perhaps some of those questions may be answered in the other presentation. My only concern is that we will then be faced with a substantial number of questions at the end, but I'm more than happy to take your guidance on this matter.
In fact, it's because I can't see the agenda before me. I would be guided by the agenda. It is correct, actually, that there might be overlapping. The presentations might be clarifying some of the issues that we... Can we take the presentations, all of them, and then discuss after that? Honorable Paulson, you wanted to say something? Okay, let's...
I've got a similar concern for not properly interrogate a particular presentation, because we have 2-3 presentations instead of having 3 questions per presentation, for example. We'll have 3 questions for all the presentations.
But can you see the what is going to follow talks about sand parks, rhino and elephant management plans. So it's almost the same thing. Yes. It talks to the same. It will add to what I think. Let's take notes and see what we can do. Can we allow Sandbox the presentation?
Chair?
Yes.
As
I've raised my hand. I wanted to say, let's be guided by the department, which presentation we can group together, and then we ask questions after those, so that you don't present, they present all the presentations, and then we have lots of questions that we want. Because in the first presentation, there's lots of questions that are coming out from the only first presentation. So if they can guide us,
can we allow this one that I see before me? Because I can see it's related to what we have just talked about. Sand parks, talking to rhino and elephant management plan. Can we allow them? I hear the concern. I think we'll have to find a way to manage that.
Yes, we allow them because it's related to the first one.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My name is Fundisile Mkhetheni. I'm the CEO of Sandparks. I am accompanied here for my presentation by Drs. Lukhando Dziba and Sam Ferreira, who just spoke. There's also Chola Mkhefe for the wildlife economy presentation. Chair, the members and yourself are correct. These things are related. You will notice that there are slides I will skip because they have already been covered by the previous presentation. Next slide. Okay, we are showing here that when it comes to elephant populations, we are managing 5% of Africa's elephants, and then 70% of the numbers of populations recorded here at home. In the SADC alone, most countries, they have lots of elephants. Botswana alone is having 135,000. Zimbabwe 80,000, Zambia 60,000, followed by Tanzania at 50. Therefore, ourselves, we stand above 20,000 elephants in the country. As you can see, around the 1970s up to early 2000, there was a program of culling. Culling was stopped by the time we were developing norms and standards. But you can see from that time, since there's been no proper control, the numbers have increased. There is some impact in terms of vegetation management, especially in areas like Kruger and some of the small protected areas where bottlenecks get created. If you look at Adok, they have been growing steadily. As we speak, in 2019, recorded 619 elephants in Adok. It started a small population of only 11 elephants that time. Therefore, there's been growing, and then there's been a lot of inbreeding in that population alone. Hence, in the past, we introduced some tuskers from the Kruger National Park to try and add to the gene pool of Ato. In Marakele, you can see there's been some fluctuations. As we speak of 308 elephants estimated for the area. Mapungubwe, there's a big fluctuation there because Mapungubwe is bordering Zimbabwe and Botswana. Seasonally, there are big populations that will cross over to Mapungubwe and then also go back to Zimbabwe and Botswana. Therefore, the numbers are fluctuating. But in 2019 census, we recorded 344 elephants moving between the countries. In Gatmut, we have one lonely elephant there in that forest, but there's been a call to introduce more elephants. People were saying from Ado. Ado elephants are not forest elephants. Therefore, we might be making a mistake if we were to augment that one elephant with the elephants from Ado. Next slide. In the next slide, we do have active management plans for each population. Those plans are ending 2022. They were approved according to the legislation. We do comply with the norms and standards for elephant management in South Africa. I know the department is engaging in reviewing those norms and standards because there were lessons learned when they were implemented in the last 10 years. These norms and standards are embedded within each management plan of the park. Next slide. Our national parks are established for a purpose. Therefore, elephants, when we look at objectives of having them, they are in line with that particular objective of the park. If you look at defining the role of elephants in the ecosystem, there's their objective in the Nisner One Elephant. In terms of managing the cultural sense of place, as you know, Mapungubwe landscape is a World Heritage Site. Therefore, elephants are part of that landscape. When it comes to impact, damage, and human wildlife conflict or interactions, you can see it's across our parks lands. When we manage historic and lag effects, and also the use of absent processes, you can see the Ado ones and the Kruger ones, there's an objective there because of the history. Around stakeholders and affected parties and regional policies cut across all our plans. And also transfer parks, you can see only those two, Kruger and Mapungubwe. And the issue of evaluating, monitoring, informing and revising, it cuts across in all our plans as an objective. Next slide. Chair and members, we say as we consider revisions, there are things we must look at when it comes to management of elephants in the country. One, we need a common vision. We need one national strategy informed by all stakeholders' views. We need a strategy that is encompassing all the views, not to allow some element of polarization around managing this species. We also need to make sure that there's a common purpose for managing elephants that is guide us. And also plans, revisions should be embedded in the strategy. Therefore, we cannot have a plan that is contrary to what the strategy says. Therefore, we need here one common vision if we want to revise our management plan in the country. When it comes to norms and standards, we need to have some incentives for the common purpose. There are some challenges that will always remain following revision. We need to look at that. We need to link issues. What are the issues of tourism, use issues, conflict issues, and issues of threats like poaching? These things should be integrated, not to allow stakeholders to polarize the discussion. At the same time, we need the type of research that is not limiting. If you want to test something in order to achieve a particular outcome or the research area, we need some flexibility there in terms of not limiting efforts in terms of doing that. We need to consult broadly because at times our consultations are in pockets. It depends who speaks to them. You start jumping and consulting that group. We need to try to consult broadly. And also we need to be flexible in our regulations in order to allow what you call adaptive management, because biodiversity is a moving target. You cannot stick to one thing to and say, this is the rule. You need to be informed by available science and you adapt and implement. Socioeconomic issues will come to play here in transformation. Changes in the economy will affect how we manage our hair elephants in broader landscape. Therefore, again, the adaptive capacity is key in terms of looking at socioeconomic issues. There are emerging threats that we must also consider highly as we revise poaching is emerging. Therefore, as we look at different values to elephants, some people interpret issues of poaching differently depending on the value. Climate change effects, because we know elephants are engineers of habitat. They can easily create an issue around human footprint and then wildlife footprint. Therefore, some flexibility there in terms of considering changes in the environment. There also, again, we need to be adaptive. I think we keep on repeating this thing because in most cases, we need to keep one idea rather than being flexible. The role of elephants in the ecosystem is key. Therefore, we need to look at that. We need to manage threats, as I indicated, and their role in the system. And also, let's look broadly in terms of effects of elephants to people living next to these protected areas. Let's look at other resources like water, food for elephants, and also safety of elephants, and also safety of the people. Contraception was once implemented, it can only work in small populations. I know that time there were concerns about the impact on social behavior of animals once we use contraception. But once again, we can exclude contraception for small populations in terms of controlling mammals. Issues of use, they come to play all the time. Not consumptive, affordability. But we do have issues of consumptive use. And therefore, again, we are saying, let us look at this and move forward in advance. Legislation, of course, is enabling. Education is key. Financial resources for elephant conservation and benefits key. We need, again, to monitor, research, and evaluate to inform a proper decision-making. We're saying here, honorable members and deputy minister, these are, as we look for, move forward, we know the history of elephant population management in the country. We know what has been happening in SADC. We know what has been happening in CITES. But as we revise, move forward, we need a balance in that. I will move, chair and members, to the Rhino. Francis, next slide. Francis did speak to this slide about integrated approach for South Africa's rhino management. There are boxes where SANParks as implementers we need to look at. That box of compulsory intervention, that's what we are doing. We do our anti-poaching activities. We do actionable intelligence, working with the cluster that is led by the department. Once again, for us, we wish that the intelligence can help to prevent people entering the park and killing a rhino. Because our aim here is to prevent the killing, not to arrest people. Arresting people is because you are already in the park illegally, so therefore we have to deal with you. But our preference is not to have people killing even one animal. Therefore, we need to respond. Fortunately, amendments of the legislation is an ongoing process as we learn. We need to increase numbers. This is where, as SANParks, we are also wanting to be strong at removing animals to safer destinations, creating sanctuaries, creating strongholds, even encourage conservation husbandry, breeding of these animals. There is another conservation strategy, whether some people like it or not. We have to increase the numbers of rhinos in order to avoid extinction. There's a one bonnet since 2016. There has been a blanket quarantine by the Department of Agriculture the veterinary people are saying there was a TB case in Kruger. Therefore, since that time, we're unable to move rhinos from Kruger. Given what we heard about what's happening in Kruger, one, we wish to remove as many as 1,000 elephants to safer destination. Also the rhinos to safer destinations so that we can be able to increase the numbers. On the game changing, we are part of disruption, the organized crime. Alternative economic choices for rhino conservation for communities, it needs most departments. The one of supply and demand is an international role that the department is looking at. Therefore, in overall, fighting and conserving rhinos, it needs an international engagement and collaboration, and also a national one. The next slide, I won't talk to it, members, because I think Francis spoke to it, the one about the rhino lab. In the plan, it might sound like a duplication. No, go back. We need to stick to protection, prevention, legislation, biological management, communication. I think what you are saying here, again, members, it needs a holistic approach. The basket of issues must be equal in terms of intervention and prioritization. Next slide. Sam spoke to this harsh reality. Numbers are declining. We have said this thing in our annual report, 2019-20. If you read page 10, we have highlighted that numbers are declining. If you read page 96, we have said numbers are declining. Therefore, we have been upfront as sandbags to say rhino numbers are declining, as you can see in those slides. Sam spoke to this minor comfort. We do have agroparks managed by sandbags, where numbers are stable, numbers are growing steadily, because yes, size matters. The smaller the park, the easier to survey, using your ground mobility, air mobility, and limited technology. Therefore, you can take animals, you can follow animals, you can monitor small groups, you can fly over every 3 hours to detect poachers. Therefore, a smaller park is easier to detect poachers compared to the big Kruger National Park. Next slide. The rethinking, given we are also in a COVID world, I think a chance to reimagine what we do around in a park scale in this case. We are thinking of investing in guarding the rhinos. If you have a small population of 16 rhinos, I was in Kruger over the weekend, in one spot, we spotted 16. Therefore, we need some capacity to say, deploy rangers to guard those rhinos. We need to look at that and monitor them. Monitoring that is also habitat included, because if they need water and food, they'll have to move. Sam spoke about protecting the cows. What's happening when one cow is killed? We need to disrupt poaching. Therefore, we need to focus in managing the rhinos, the actual asset, is one area that we rethink. We need to focus on security. Our staff integrity is key here. We need to disrupt syndicates because they do infiltrate our own staff. We do arrest our own staff, which is not a nice thing. Not only rangers. Even after the staff members working in security broadly, even in technical services. Ranger morale, we need to look at these things and our relations with neighbors. We must balance security with other conservation initiatives. Therefore, we need a balancing act here. We need to improve what Francis presented our interplay with other enforcement agencies and prosecuting agencies. They all have their own challenges, but we need to work with them. In not all of members, I won't speak to it because Sam has spoken to it at length. Therefore, I will leave it here. Thank you very much, members. Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, thank you very much. Hello. I suspect that maybe because of the concerns that have been raised, less questions now from honorable members. We will take the last presentation at the end. Can I see hands?
Yeah. You person are went first, please.
You are first, honorable person. I think let me ask honorable members to. Okay, I can see my system is allowing me to see your hands now. Honorable Paul Wilson, Honorable Phillips, you are number two. Honorable Weber, you are number three. And Honorable Bryant, you are number four. And the last is Honorable Singh. Can we start with you, Honorable Paulson?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson of the department.
Yes, I can hear you now. And yes. No, continue, Honorable Paulson.
Thank you to the presenters for the presentation. And you were correct, Chairperson. Some of the questions that we had were answered in the subsequent presentation. But I just wanted to know on the strategies used to reduce the poaching of rhinos. And also, you know, if we, those game rangers that are proposed to guard those small groups of rhinos, if we will look at how we can recruit people from the neighboring communities to assist in that task so that we can, you know, that there's a sense of ownership in the communities, the surrounding communities, that could obviously improve the security of the parks and the animals as well. The next question is, there's a distinction between the white rhino and the black rhino, and according to reports, the black rhino is, you know, it's headed for extinction. There's not much of it left. So I'd like to know, like, what measures are taken to guard the more threatened variety of rhino. That's all questions, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Honorable Phillips.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you for the presentation, and good morning to everybody. I have quite a few questions. I hope that you'll bear with me and perhaps make notes. If you don't have a reply to my question right now, I'm quite happy if you submit a reply to our corpus, and it will then be provided by our secretary. The first one I want to know is, when it comes to the killing of our elephants and the difficulty in prosecuting people for that killing, do we not also link our elephants' DNA, the elephants that are killed, DNA to the tusks that are confiscated? Is that not done? And then I would like to know the number of lion bones referred to. They were legally killed.
how do you come to that conclusion that they were legally killed? Is that also a matter of DNA? Is there a process of educating farmers in other methods of using to protect their stock, like dogs, rather than killing the leopards? And we've been shown that less rhino are poached, but in numbers. What I would like to see is the percentage of rhinos poached of the existing rhinos every year. I think that is going to give us quite a shock. Then I'd also like to know, what is the average length of the trial of the rhino poachers? The collaboration that we have with SADC, how many arrests and convictions have resulted in that particular collaboration? And then to get onto the elephants, that was the presentation by the CEO. What I'd like to know is why the paralysis to do anything about the increasing numbers of the elephants when it already became apparent. Why wait until it's actually getting to the stage where it's out of control? My second question is, why use the money that you received from the one-stop sale of ivory to upgrade the elephant abattoir at a time when elephants were not being killed? Culling will turn us into a pariah state in the international community. The narrow focus ideology interest group referred to, that was a wide consultation held in two different years with a number of different groups, and there was no response to the written report to that. So I think that that particular statement needs to be looked into, and it seems to be one where the CEO is finding a way to regard those particular consultation that were held. Then, besides the population control, what are the reasons that Sand Park uses lethal and fear-based methods, such as the disturbance shooting of elephant management? Slide 6 states restoring gradient of elephant resources, including food and water, as well as comfort safety. The latter are not resources, and by stating them as such, the plan removes park's responsibilities to comply with the purpose and application and guiding principles of the NNS. Slide 6, justified sustainable use of benefits associated with elephants. What type of sustainable consumption use is being considered? And let's call it what it is. It's not harvesting, it's slaughtering. When we kill cows, sheep, goats, we slaughter them. So please, let's not dance around. Let's use the correct terminology here. What is the position on live trade and cross-border transportations to both ex and institute destinations? Sustainable use cannot be the driving force behind elephant management, as per Clause 6 of the guiding principles of the NNS. My next question is, how will the elephant strategy and outcomes and recommendations of the HLP feed into the existing approved elephant management plan? That's my last question. And as I said, I'm happy to take the answers in writing at a later stage if they can't be provided now. Thank you.
Next speaker is Honorable Bryant.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought I was number 4, but I'm happy to go number 3. That's okay. Chairperson, again, thank you to the officials for those presentations. I think Honourable Phillips covered some of the points that I was going to raise, but I do still have a substantial number of questions, and I hope that we can, by the time we finish asking these, engage with as many of those questions today as possible, but again, to reiterate her sentiments that if there are any questions that can't be answered, just that those be answered via written submissions to your secretariat, because these are very important questions, and we're not going to simply ask them and then allow those questions to disappear into the ether when so many of our natural species are currently at risk. So just going back to the first presentation,
there was mention made of the provincial joint and the national joint operations taking place. I'd just like to find out if there are any steps being taken to engage even further down or further along. We talked about three spheres, not supposed to be BTS. But in terms of local operations with local law enforcement, you know, the city of Cape Town, for instance, has a very effective marine enforcement unit, which works in conjunction with the SAPS, with the coastal management teams, and with our other provincial and national authorities. Are there similar intentions to work with local law enforcement agencies going forward along with those provincial operations, finding out how that works? The relationship with SADC, Honourable Phillips has mentioned that already, but just specifically the relationship with Botswana. I know there are a number of elephant and rhino that are being poached in Botswana currently. And if we could just get some feedback as to our current working relationship with the Botswanan authorities in particular. The point's been made a number of times that it's very difficult to trace poachers once they leave the park. I'm intrigued as to the exact reasons why that is, and if that can be expanded on. I understand that it's a very vast area, but why it is that once a poacher leaves the park, there's an impression that they sort of, you know, just appear. What are the reasons behind that, and why is that so difficult to do? I did also pick up on the point around lion bone. If they're not coming from illegally killed animals, where are those lion bones coming from? Surely they aren't, you know, lions wandering around and passing away for people to pick up the bones. Where are these bones coming from? And has there been an investigation launched as to where those bones are coming from? Because they must be coming from somewhere. The matter of allegations of corruption within SANPAR, I know it's something which is touched on throughout the presentations, but one does get the impression that there is not as much of a commitment towards addressing the internal issues within SANPARKS relating to poaching as there is around dealing with the threats from outside. And I think that's central to resolving these challenges with poaching is the addressing of the internal activities specifically relating to some of those staff numbers. And just as an example, Chairperson, it was in February last year, there was a report that SANPARKS some of their rangers had caught other field rangers involved in poaching activities. And during that arrest, which was supported by SAPS, they got a heavy caliber firearm, ammunition, poaching-related equipment, and the two accused were granted bail of 5,000 rand each on condition that they don't leave their village. Were these two convicted? Are they still working for SANPARKS? You know, these are ongoing questions which tend to come up that incidents take place. But again, what are the consequences? How many of these people are being arrested? Not based on, you know, the narrow numbers that have been provided already. If one actually looks for 362 convictions based on the actual number of arrests, only gives you a stat of about 18.7%. So we're looking at a far lower level of conviction and far lower level of follow-through, and we need to know why that is. Just in terms of deadlines, there's a lot of talk around the policies, around the strategies, around what people want to do. But in kind of opposition to some of the other presentations we've seen at our most recent meetings, I don't see deadlines. I don't see the urgency to say, this is, you know, when we want to have this thing achieved. For instance, the combating of wildlife crime strategy. We know that once intended that it be presented before Cabinet. Was that going to happen? What steps are being taken to ensure that that goes before Cabinet? Because that is a very urgent matter that we need to look into. And then just focus on rhinos, and this, I'm gonna end on rhinos. The fact which hasn't sort of been as prominent as it should be is that there's been a 70% drop in the number of rhinos over the past 10 years in Kruger National Park. In the past 10 years, 70% of our rhino population has been decimated. And I know we can focus on the fact that during COVID, we had some slightly more appealing numbers in terms of the number of rhino poached. But as we can see by those graphs that were provided by Mr. Pereira early on, as soon as COVID and the lockdown restrictions were lifted, we saw a spike straight away. That spike is going to continue, especially with the unemployment that we're currently facing as a result of the virus. So there is no opportunity time for us to rest on our laurels, or for Sandbox to rest on their laurels as the implementing agent here. And we need deadlines. In terms of the rhinos, and this was a question that I did submit to the Secretariat, and it did go through from what I understand, but it wasn't touched on. Just in terms of the actual rhino numbers themselves, we've seen that, according to the stats that were provided, there was a drop of 1,995 rhinos in Kruger's own figures. That's from 7,647 in 2016 to 5,652 in 2017. There's another drop of 996 rhinos in previous figures. That's from 5,652 in 2017 to 4,656 in 2018. Now there's a discrepancy in these numbers. And when we look at it, for instance, the 2020 figure, 3,817, was this based on a census? Was it based on an estimate? If it was an estimate, what is the basis for that calculation? The numbers with regards to the rhino populations, there appears to be a missing section of rhino within that. Maybe Mr. Pereira can assist with this. But it's very confusing because those unaccounted rhinos, are these perhaps rhinos that have been poached that have not been reported for a contact, or are they just missing, hiding under a tree? I'm not sure where they would be, but that is a very concerning statistic. And this, just lastly, in terms of the translocation numbers, are you able to provide the numbers of rhino that have been translocated out of Kruger for each of the years from 2016 to 2020? We need to know about sales, we need to know about donations, loans, and any of the other reasons why these rhinos have been translocated. It's very important for us to get that information. I will leave it there for now. Thank you very much, Chip.
First and window eyes completely open. Please refer to the safety card.
Where did you forget me?
Is the chairperson still connected?
I'm checking,
but there was a next speaker. Let's continue.
Actually, simply where I was supposed to be before honorable, but I was supposed to be possible.
I think, where is Comrade DB?
He's not in the meeting, Honorable Mbatha. I think Honorable Mbatha
can... No, I'm here in the first Comrade. I had reported that I will lock off. But I think Honorable Mbatha can proceed.
Thank you, Honorable. Our processes, and I would like to know if these can be
There was a project, a contract by SANFAR to USA and I think we were to vet at SANFAR was responsible. For the project was a special project. It was run in SANFAR used to work with the anti-poaching. It was a unit that was specifically made for anti-poaching. As far as I know, this special project is not running anymore. They were given 25 million rand to do this. So I would like to know why this project is not being run. I know no units that resigned. And then I would like to have a breakdown of this 25 million antibody. And are you willing, are you going to replace this unit or what are you going to do? I would like to have more on this unit. Then I would like to know, in 2014, Warren Buffett gave 225 million rand specifically to SANFAR for anti-poaching, and this money was supposed to highly train brain testing, improve intelligence gathering and observation, elite canine units, and enhance surveillance team. So I do believe that you have put in this surveillance team specifically in the Kruger National Park. My understanding is as well, where the surveillance are, you have patrol units. You also have what you can call a war room in the middle of Kapula, where all where the surveillance pick up rhino poachers or rhino being killed or your unit, you can inform them immediately if you use the surveillance to let them know where rhinos are poaching. And my understanding is well that all of this is supposed to be active already. And then in any rhino that gets poached will go to this dashboard into this wall room in Kapula. So we should be quite clearly updated exactly how many crops, how many rhinos are happening. I want to know that is not happening. I also would like to know, although this money was given to SANFAR in 2014, I know it takes a little bit of time to implement it. I do would like to know where this money was spent, a breakdown of it, how effective it is. As the canine unit started, I know there's one in KZ. I would like to know there's one in KMT. And yes, just a breakdown of man's money so that we can know what has happened to it. Because it could have covered a lot of our anti-poaching. Then my next question is, we have about 265 black rhino left in Kruger National Park. We have some black rhino in some of the other farms, I know. Back in December last year, 17 black rhino was moved to Malawi Luwonde National Park. My question is, as Mr. as our CEO of SANFAR said, Mr. Kenny, said that you are looking for other destinations, safe destinations for this rhino to be moved to. So I hope it's not across the border, because we need to increase our own numbers of black rhino, which is very, very close to extinction. And my question is a couple. Why did we move 17 rhino to this park? The video that I watched on this basically says it's for the protection. My question is, we do need to learn to protect our own rhino. We cannot send all across the board to other countries to protect the rhino. So where is the safe distance that you are, you want to move the rhinos and the elephants actually do? And that does mean then that we're actually losing the fight against poachers. If you're looking for safe destination, we're not in South Africa, we can look at the animals too. Okay, I will withstand this message. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I see Honorable Mbatha.
I think I would just say, but I don't mind. I don't mind giving Honorable Mbatha a chance. Okay. Honorable Mbatha, if you want to go first, I can talk.
No, you can go, Honorable Singh.
Thank you, Shandis. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson and Deputy Minister, and I greet all the colleagues and officials, and thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, you know, listening to this presentations reminds me of the assistance I was giving my grade 4 grandson on the weekend. We just got to write a test. And, you know, I asked him some questions, 10 questions. And at the end of it, I said, well, you've got 11 out of 10. And he laughed at me and he said, but why 11 out of 10? I said, you've answered them so well that I can't even give you 10 out of 10. I must give you 11 out of 10. Now, Chairperson, why this presentation reminds me of that is that these strategies on paper that have been presented to us, they deserve 15 out of 10, not even 11 out of 10. They're excellent, they're laudable, but the big question, Chairperson and colleagues that are listening and Deputy Minister, how effective the implementation of these strategies? And I think the focus for me in this presentation is the challenges that you've identified. And I'd like to know what is going to be done to ensure that the challenges which we identified and which we've been hearing about for the past 5, 6, 8, 10 years are going to be addressed as effectively by all role players, because it's not only this department that has this responsibility, sole responsibility, but it's a joint responsibility of many departments. You've mentioned the departments, Department of Justice, and various other departments that have to come into play. Now, Honorable Chairperson, when I look at a document that was given to us in terms of research, and if I hear the CEO of SANParks correctly, he says we need an integrated strategy, a national and international one. But, Chairperson, I'm very pleased to read that in 2013, an impressive 80 delegates were present at a workshop where the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Environment was present, ministers were present, NGOs were present, and this took place at Kukuza. There were resolutions arising out of the meeting. Some of them have been specifically mentioned by some of our colleagues, and I'm not going to go through them, but I think the department can be given these resolutions. Then again, in 2014, there was another meeting that was hosted, and there were public hearings, and over there were resolutions, very, very laudable resolutions. Then in May 2017, Parliament considered a strategy, which was the first of its kind in South Africa, and which had one primary goal: to direct law enforcement structures in South Africa and empower them with the necessary means to reduce and prevent the increasing scourge of wildlife trafficking in the country itself and abroad. Now, what has happened to all these recommendations that were made by NGOs and by respective partners in this game? And I feel, Honorable Chairperson, that our challenge is going to remain the same unless somebody takes the lead again, and perhaps it's this department, of bringing together all these departments. We hear justice taking long to prosecute. We hear the police not being able to find people outside of a park, which I find, you know, I can't even believe that, and Honorable Brian referred to that. We hear that the hawks, you know, there's so much crime in the country, and we got the statistics the other day. Do you think there's political will for some of these agencies to focus on wildlife poaching, trafficking, etc., etc.? That is the big question for me moving forward, and I hope that the Deputy Minister will give us some answers on how she can take the lead in ensuring that these resolutions are implemented sooner. Honorable Chairperson, for example, if you take in our presentation, we heard about lions and breeding facilities that are inspected. How many times a year are these breeding facilities inspected? We know there's capital lion breeding that's taking place. We know there are so many things. We heard from Francis Craig that in terms of law enforcement, we have a very small complement. So the point I'm making, Chairperson, is unless we get together, make resolutions, but make sure they are implemented with time frames. Let's not talk about cabinet here, because what is cabinet going to do? They need to enforce. They need to make sure that they put money into these initiatives so that we can protect those helpless animals that cannot speak for themselves. I think I'll stop there. But, Honorable Chairperson, I don't want to go into specific questions. Specialized courts. I mean, why can't the entire Department of Justice to have specialized courts on poaching when people are arrested? So these are some of the things, but these are initiatives that have been documented, well documented, over a period of time. Let us now walk the talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mbata.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for this presentation. On the first presentation, I'm happy that the elephant poaching has been reduced, including the lions, and also the issue of lions where they have been successfully prosecuted cases. But let me come to the leopards. The leopard, on the issue of leopards, the presenter is saying that there is a demand for leopard skins. There's an NGO that has tried to do the awareness, but I think the awareness needs to be ongoing. Remember, behavioral change takes time. And if you look back in our culture, the leopard skin is being that skin that is used by the kings, the chiefs, traditional hunters, including the lion skin. But I wonder, because there's nothing that is being said there, but I know the one that is being used a lot is the leopard skin, because as a queen also from the Undabezitha, we also have that attachment, traditional attachment with the leopard skin. So my worry, my question will be like this. Have you tried any relationship with the kings, with the traditional practitioners, the traditional markets? Have a partnership or an arrangement where we sit and discuss and try to emphasize to them that these are the problems that you get through the coaching and so on and so forth. And then how best can you correct it? Because automatically there are those animals who will die on their own or by mistake, and those things can be felt. It can be sold to them by the department or the SANPAC, so that we avoid this thing of poaching. Just get sit down with them and get really what are the things that they really utilize, including the one of the plants, Sicilian plants, because really there are those traditional herbs that they will want to have. Rather have a negotiation and then maybe somewhere, somehow, there must be some relationship with those people so that you avoid and just try to use the health promotion strategies. The other thing is that with the farmers, have you spoken to the farmers also on how best can they deal with the leopards when they are stealing or killing their stock? And also, you need to check, because nowadays you find the lions, the leopards outside in the community. Because remember, we have moved from our area to the areas, invaded the areas where it's supposed to be the animals staying, but we are staying there because those are the our residential areas now. And the other part is the issue on I haven't heard you talking about how best can we avoid the issue of cross contamination or how the diseases can be transferred to human beings based on the wild animals. Because when we talk of the timberline, it was found out that it's one of the animals, wild animals, that has transmitted COVID from his from pangolin to humans. These are other things when you also touch, you must also touch on, so that we understand, because when we deal with these animals, we must deal with them politically. And then the other thing is that we have so many challenges that are on page 36. But if you catch the recycling criminal, there's something that is not going right. What have you done to reduce those recycling criminals? That means these people, this is their bread and butter. Hence, they will always go back to this issue. What have you done to reduce the number of recycling criminals? And then, on the slow criminal procedure, tell us what have you done on that, on that? Because really, I think you can talk to the Department of Justice, talk to the Department of Police and say, please assist us. These cases are agents. How best can we deal with this case? So give us the challenges and give us what have you done to correct that. On the issue of staff involvement in the issue of coaching, what charges do you have or disciplinary measures, and what is the statistics of those officials, the total number of officials that you found them guilty of on the coaching? Because it's just a staff involvement. Have you done any research or have you strengthened any security so that you make sure that there's nothing that can be taken out of the sun park or whatever, private or especially not private, especially in the state one? I'm very much worried about the campaign. The campaign must be, I know this one is saying the one time campaign, but what other campaigns can you implement so that the community at large, they understand what, it's not only the nearby community, remember, it's everyone, because me, a leopard, I can be a need of the leopard skin. Then I talked to someone from Shabiyadingan. Then that person gets it for me. And then what happens? I don't know where did that person get it. So it must be a national campaign, so that, and it must be continuous, so that this thing must get into the heads of the people that this is wrong, and how can I correct this? Where do I go? And the issue of the poverty in rural areas that also increases. So if you look at, and including the respecting of criminals, it goes back to the poverty that in your areas, within the rural areas. But how does the community benefit on the 30% issue that from that area, so that they can benefit, they can have projects? How do you involve them so that they avoid being the criminals? And I don't understand the of insufficient resources. Tell us what other ways I know you're talking about the donor funding, but what other ways do you raise your funds so that you can have more funds, because really you need more funds. If you don't have the equipment, facilities and so forth, you can't move. But you say to us next time, this is what we have done, and this is what is still going to be done. Have a plan, a long-term, a short-term and a long-term plan. I'm worried about the EMS, we say the capacity of the EMS, EMI. What has been done? Because if you talk about that, it also rings to me that when I was speaking with the city of China on some issues that needed the EMI, city of China said they don't have the EMI. And it says again, how best can the department assist the municipalities to ensure that all municipalities have the EMI? Because if they don't have the EMI, there's nothing they can do. They have to wait police or they wait for the one from the provincial environment. Did that. And also, this is the vacancy. That means now the staff is for the shorter staff. When the posts are vacant posts are being are no longer funded, then there's overloading to the officials. And then what has he done again on that to remove that barrier? There must be a plan to say this is how we do, this is what we are doing. You know, the other thing that I've realized that you have done a good thing. There's a research project on rhinos. Can we get that once the research has been finalized so that we have a bite and understand what is the real problem on the rhinos? And on the issue of the national and international support, yes, it's good because we have our entry of court in this country. And how best can we work with the relevant department to make sure that there's nothing that is illegally going out of this either province or to the international. Please give us a plan also to say how best how far and how best are you going to resolve on those issues. And then when we are still talking on the first presentation, I believe that there was a high level panel that dealt with captive lion breeding. Maybe we should get a feedback on that so that we understand what is happening, because there's lion bones that are being sold. And when you talk about captive lion breeding, there's bones, there's a lot of things that are being sold, but you don't know where the money goes to. So that doesn't come to the coffers of the department or the government, but it's being used for private use. And it's something that even the NGOs, they say, they are saying must be banned. And we have a lot of lengthy discussions on it. Maybe we must get a report, because I know the minister has done a lot. There's a high-level panel, but how far is the high-level panel on this issue? It's now 2021, we must get feedback. Then also on the same part, I have a problem with the issue of the poachers being right there in the same part. That means you need to revisit to the issue of the system to see how best can you correct it in order for these poachers not to come in. And do the legal deeds that they are doing within the sun path. And I am happy also, sun path, that you have done a SWOT analysis, which is very clear. You understand what you need to do. You know your strengths, you know your weaknesses. But it can just give us your intervention plan from this analysis, so that it becomes a very progressive instrument. I think that's all. Thank you.
Okay, Sahambi.
Hey, we lost him, but he's trying to rejoin the meeting. Mr. McGee, sir? Mr. McGee, sir?
I think he said he was on a flight. Perhaps we should get the department to respond to whatever they can respond to. Unless you're seeing any more hands, I don't see any more hands.
I don't, Mr. Singh.
There are no hands. I was the last one. I think now we must respond to all the questions. So, and he can get us while we are busy with the response from the
department.
No, that's fine.
Comrade Simpiwe, or Honourable Member Simpiwe, will then request the presenter from SANPAS to respond to the question, and then he will be assisted also by the DGP responsible for the area, and also DGP Isham is also here, who is responsible for monitoring in the department and region. Can I then give over to them to respond to those questions?
Do you want me to start again?
Yes, please do start, CEO.
Okay. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chair, and honorable members for all the questions. I touch on those that are affecting SANPARKS directly. If there's anything, Chair, if your time allows, my colleagues can add Dr. Biba and Dr. Ferreira. Honorable Paulson, you asked a question around recruiting from neighboring communities. We are doing it regularly. I think almost 90% of the youth working on our operations in our national parks are from the neighboring communities. Even those engaging ones who have been working in this area are from the neighboring communities. Therefore, our emphasis is to look locally in terms of empowerment, job creation, and also recruitment. The guarding of rhinos is one thing we need capacity. When we speak of Kruger, we speak of a size of almost Israel or Belgium. That was a very big area. But we are saying everything. We will look at guardianship. On the issue of black rhinos, not much left. That's where from our side, Honorable Pauls and Lucy were able. Because the black rhino is a browser, it eats prints. White rhino is a grazer. And then white rhino likes open spaces. That's why you see a lot of the market. Black rhinos are a bit aggressive. They are not in many numbers like in white rhino. Therefore, SAM will come in here and talk to the stability on black rhino we are talking about. Yes, there are fewer in numbers even across Africa compared to the white rhino, but we are stable there in terms of them being killed. Honorable Phillips, I will speak to the, I think more of your questions were on elephants. Yes, I spoke of culling. Culling will be part of the basket. And we are saying here, we are not going to just put culling in the basket without a proper research. I think our scientists can talk at length around the issue of concentration of elephants causing impact in our parks. It's not only about numbers exploding, it's about also how they behave. Therefore, the intervention as part of adaptive management needs to be the basket of options. Therefore, we won't leave any of the options, but we'll engage in detail on what option we are taking. On the issue of sales, the money from the sales, it was clear from CITES. It was money to conserve the elephant, community work, and also research. First and foremost, we stuck to that mandate exactly. We were working with the department in terms of releasing these funds for white people. But we stuck to that mandate and conditions that were given by CITES in terms of the proceeds from the ivory sale at that time. I think I answered the question of disturbance shooting. It's not disturbance. There will be disturbance shooting, but we'll also be open about it, the method we'll be using when we do the culling. On the sustainable use, what is being considered? We look across the value chain. Around issues of use. you did touch around, yes, elephant numbers are growing. You spoke to the issue of live cross-border. Although Honourable Member Weber also cautioned us around taking rhinos across, let me address that. We are not planning to take rhinos across to any state. I'm not sure of the Malawi issue, but for now, safer destinations, we talk of within the country. Areas like Northern Cape are far from airports. There are private people and the nature reserves, our own parks, where we feel that it is safer to have animals there. Therefore, we'll be looking for areas where there's no threat. Before we release any animals, we do habitat suitability, viability, and security assessment before we release. Therefore, I'm addressing Honorable Webb on the one about rhinos across. However, coming back to Honorable Phillips around conflict across the border, we even have a plan working with Peace Park Foundation of taking some animals, well, crook animal numbers are very high, taking them across to Zinave National Park in Mozambique. It is stable, it's safer, assessments were done. I'm talking here about other species that are in abundance in the Kruger National Park. Therefore, we're considering the issues of cross-border on other species, except on rhinos, unless there's a new direction. We do respond to the questions of the public. If we have been done Honorable Phillips, perhaps we can request those groups where we haven't responded again to engage me. We will make time and respond to the questions that perhaps we've never responded to. But in most cases, whether things come via fire or we do hearings, we respond to questions. I had many stakeholder groups, even the welfare institutions, I met with them in the offices, even before lockdown, we engaged on issues. They can attest to that. Honorable Brian, we charge people, our own staff. They also get through the proper hearing in terms of our internal code and procedures, and then we act appropriately. I will also couple his response with the question from Honorable Mbata. I think he was also speaking to that number of staff involved. We do have the numbers, Honorable Mayor, of the staff involved, but once a staff member is implicated, we act and the case gets opened with the with staff, and then the NPA will pronounce in terms of prosecution. We have that information if Honorable Members would like to look at that. Honorable Brian, you also spoke about we speak strategies and actions. Yes, we do so, but if you look at our APP that we normally present to Parliament, we do indicate what we do in a particular year. Perhaps it can be appropriate time for members to ask us why it's not there. But most of our strategies and implementation plans are in our annual performance plan that we present to Parliament. In some of your questions, Honorable Brian, you sent to us, we have drafted the responses. We are going to process them through the department, but we have waited for this meeting. If there are any other questions that we can add in that detailed response, because your questions were detailed, we won't respond to them now, but we'll respond to them in writing, Honorable Member, and then we'll be provided to you. Honorable Weber, I'm not sure if the 25 million you mentioned aside, but we can check our books. One thing I know, there was a large amount that was invested by Howard Buffett. At some point, he pulled out. However, we can provide what we've done with the money when it was still active. We did air mobility, as you know, that we bought some choppers, copters, with that money, number one. We established the Canaan unit with that money. We also put a seismic cable in the western boundary from Kruger Gate to Park Benny Gate. The funding was not enough. We have also put another monitoring fence on the eastern boundary in the Kruger National Park. We do have a mission area where we monitor activities, such as gun sounds. Again, some of budget money was used for that. We can, if allowable, provide information on the project that we've done with that money. General Houston, we moved him to head office for special projects, number one. Number two, he is now also part of the Infusion Center and part of St. Mark's Analysis Center. We are using him in order to assist us to direct poachers that go to KZN, they go to Northwest, they go to the Free State. I think Francis can talk to that. But about him, he was moved to head office, but now he's working closely with Francis in the Infusion Center. We also put the of Howard Buffett in surveillance work that we are doing. Hence, I said we can provide the projects that were implemented. I spoke about the safer destinations. I'm not sure of the Malawi deal. Perhaps if we can get a direct question, we might respond appropriately. Where I'm sitting, I'm not aware of it. One of the things we noted effectiveness. The department will respond to that. Honorable Mbatha, I responded to the issue of staff involved. We have the numbers and the cases. On the issue of campaigns, we have a couple of projects underway. Like we do have park forums for each park. We have a program called Kids in Parks that we're also involved in the Kids in Park program of the department. We are also doing Parks Week. You remember the September week where we give free entrance to South Africans. In terms of resource mobilization, we do have a funding strategy of SANBACs and their police. Yes, we are making inroads in terms of engaging private sector. They do donate. We do respond on the money. Entering our parks. As we speak, the Kruger team is busy revising the plan for Kruger. The size of Kruger is a concern. We are changing strategies. Therefore, we want a renewed plan for the area in order to deal with the issues of both incursions. I think, Honorable Chair, I have attempted to respond to the question. Now we can now our colleagues, if they want to add, Dr. Ferreira and Kuba, if you agree, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
Is Dr. Ferreira here?
I am here, ma'am. Dr. Ferreira.
Okay. Dara Austin from the CEO.
Madam, when I listen to the CEO, I think the kind of questions that honourable members have asked require very specific detailed responses. I propose that it would be better that we actually address those in a written format, so we can give proper value to those questions and answer them properly.
All right, no, thank you very much. I don't know, where is the chairperson there? Because I can see that Honorable Phillips is up, but I don't know.
Okay.
Chair. Yes?
Let me, are you done with the responses? Your team, are they done, all of them?
I'm saying that members who ask questions like Honorable Dave Bryant and Honourable Member Cheryl Phillips, I saw them are up. So if there are questions that are outstanding, we'll hear from them. Then if the team are not in the position of responding to those, then they'll have them to respond and inform. Chairperson, I can see that you are here. Thank you, Chairperson. That's all that I wanted to say. before we, I can conclude on some of the issues that were directed to myself, then take the next presentation. Thank you, Chairperson. That's all that I wanted to say.
Honorable Mbata, you wanted to say something?
Oh, yes? I'm saying that while you were, you had a problem, the PM requested that Comrade Dave and Comrade Phillips, they be given a platform to say what they want to say, so that they can, the department can answer. You can continue, Comrade Chairperson.
Okay, Honorable Phillips.
Thank you so much, Chair, and welcome back.
Honorable Phillips.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
I heard the responses from the CEO, and I have to thank him for that. But I would just like to ask him if he could categorically say that no funds from the proceeds of the ivory sales were used to refurbish this Kakuza abattoir.
Yes, listen, can I speak?
Chairperson, you are unmuted.
Please. Yes, please.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. Just in terms of the offer that was made by the official to provide us with the stats and the involvement of Kruger staff in the poaching, thank you for that offer. We very much would like those statistics. I know that if we aren't going to be providing any specific details around names and activities, we can at least have the numbers of staff implicated and alleged activities provided to the committee. So thank you very much for that offer, and I hope that we can get those details sent along with the other information that is going to be answered from the questions. Just a very brief follow-up question. In terms of the number of poachers that were released last year with the presidential pardons, do we have any idea if that applied to poachers and if any of those stats comes through? And then just in terms of what's been referred to as integrity management, and I'm only assuming talking about things like polygraph lie detector tests, are those voluntary for staff or are staff compelled to participate in these polygraph tests? And what are the outcomes in terms of that and the consequences, for instance, of somebody coming through those tests with
not the abattoir. Thank you, Honorable Guy and Joe. Honorable Guy and Joe.
Thank you. Hello, Chair. Can you hear me?
Can you
Chairperson?
Yeah,
yes.
Chair.
Yes, I can hear you.
Can you hear me, Chairperson?
Yes, please. I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Okay. No, Chair, I got it all. Oh, okay. No, I there were two questions that I wanted. Okay, Chair, thank you. There were two questions that they were done, but unfortunately I bought for some parts. I wanted to ask amongst the Sandbox staff. We just wanted to ensure that none of them undermine the efforts that are being put into law enforcement to protect the rhinos. And also, check it's going to be advised that they search all the cars,
that are entering and leaving Kruger National Park so that they can because we hear that there are some staff members that are involved in these wrongdoings. So if they can thoroughly search all the cars that are leaving and entering Sandbags, those are the questions. Maybe others have been asked by my colleague. I was cut off. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Can you then respond to
Chairperson?
Yes. Can we respond?
Chairperson, I will give to CEO of Sunpark just to respond. Is the minister here? I was saying that from Honorable Fuller, there was an assurance that she needed from CEO of Sunpark with regards to the 25 million. I think that was a question that I could get. And also from Honorable Member Brian, I think you also then wanted assurance about the staff members who are involved. That is, he was looking for numbers and also the kind of offences. And I think the CEO tried to respond to that, but I think he will then make sure that the members get it in a written form. Although he did indicate that he's not looking for details, but he wants the number and he wanted to know what is happening, what is the status now of those staff members in Kruger National Park in all the parks. So I think those are the two. And the last member, unfortunately, we could not hear everything that was Comrade Marshall said because it was very difficult to hear her. But the last sentence I could hear was something like a comment, if I read it correctly, Chair. Before that, I just respond on one or two issues that were alluded to by Honorable Singh. Can I then ask the CEO maybe to respond and give assurance to Honorable Phillips?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Deputy Minister. I will give assurance on the money from the proceeds of ivory, not the abattoir. What we did, we spent money to upgrade the vault in Kruger using the Maasai. That money, because of the capacity, more horns coming in. There were also some from the businesses. We had to expand the vault. We used the money from those proceeds to do that, not for the abattoir. Honorable Bryant, on the issue of polygraphy integrity tests, we do that. I remember, I think 4 years ago, we did the EXCO members integrity testing because staff members at the parks who are unionized, they were resisting at some point. We had to develop a policy making it compulsory for integrity testing. The discussions that are starting today on the security plan, we are going to go back to look at that integrity, polygraphy, how often. We need to have an agreement with unions, especially those working with rhinos. We will have to do frequently the ease of testing. At some point, once our plan is done, we need to look to focus on special ranger force for enforcement, besides rangers doing conservation, is the plan that we're starting to discuss now, in order to have a special regime for those employees working on rhinos. We will, of course, engage the unions and adapt our policies for that. In terms of the staff involved, I have a high-level number, although we do in writing. On rhino-related matters, we had 43
staff members. Other crime is 40. Therefore, we have 57 staff members involved over time. Number of staff dismissed is 52. Received warning is 1. Staff reinstated is 2. Number of staff not found guilty is 2. We talk about us implementing our policies. Most cases are with the police and the courts. If I can't talk to those because they take long time, that's the courts who can provide that information. For our internal processes, that's what we've done. We'll supply this information to the honorable members. Honorable Councillor, although I didn't hear it correctly, but I heard you talking about us strengthening searching. Yes, we do. We do random searches, but we want now to increase our ability in our days to detect homes and also guns. Because we're a two-faced operation, remember, we accept tourists, we must smile all the time. Now we forget criminals, we don't have to smile. That's why we do the random checks. Because sometimes I hear tourists complaining that our rangers are rough, I'm a tourist, why I get searched? Therefore, we need to balance on how we do the searches. Yes, we agree that we need to enhance the area of search, but we are exploring some technology so that we can have metal detectors and also to detect the horn. Thank you, Honourable Member. Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Over to you, Honourable Deputy Minister. You wanted to conclude on this one.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wanted to assure Honourable on the issue of the resolution that he said that there were resolutions taken in different events and workshops held previously, of which we are not aware of. I'm talking now about the new administration, the minister in particular. But I just want to commit and say that we then look for those resolutions. We'll make a means of getting those resolutions so that we can monitor the implementation thereof. With regard to the specialized courts that were mentioned, or dedicated courts, this has been a challenge with regard to government, because I remember very well, Chairperson, the issues of the environmental crimes and also the dedicated courts come as far as 2009, when one was involved in the issues of environment as a member of the portfolio committee that time, and it seems as if that did not then take off the ground as we were expecting. And also that's the result why today we are faced with these cases of staff that takes forever. Because some of the cases, staff cases on environmental crimes, that come as far as 2009, 2010, 11, 12, and people are still out on bail, and hence then some decided then to resign from the organization. So I think that's one of the problems that we are faced with. And then Honourable Mbatha raised the issue of the recycling of criminals. That is also a challenge in the country. We say a repeat offenders. Know that a repeat offenders is a huge challenge. Even those offenders that committed serious crimes like your trio crimes, which include murder, rapist, house robbery, armed robbery, you get some of them lingering in the streets because they commit the crime today and they get bail, they go out, they do the same crime again. So that area, I'm sure it does not only affect us as an environment, it affects the entire country. So I don't know what is it that justice is going to do on that, but I know that I've involved for many years. That one is still a challenge. And then Honourable Mbatha spoke also about the report from the high-level panel. I would just want to beg you, Chairperson, and say that I think the minister, when she has received the report and went through the report, she will definitely report to the full committee about the status of RAS report or what is it that she got out of that high panel report.
that those were the issues that I wanted to just to give answers on. Our next presentation, Chair, is the one on the wildlife economy, and which is our last presentation. Thank you very much.
Before that, I'm not sure if Honorable Brian's hand is, but I think we must conclude. I thought they were flexible enough when they said all the other issues that have not been responded to must come to us in writing. But Honorable Brian, and the last one as well, I can see in the chat Honorable Ganjo. Is saying she knows that she was cutting, but she would have wanted to hear from Land Parks about lifestyle audit, whether they do that amongst their staff. Honorable Bryant.
Thank you, Jefferson. It's a very, very brief one. I know that there was an outstanding oversight visits planned for Kruger National Park last year. I'm just wondering if the committee would and yourself would feel that it's necessary for us to prioritize that. I feel that we should do, because a lot of these issues will be a lot easier for us to ascertain and get oversight from if we are actually physically able to see them ourselves and interact with the officials concerned at these areas. So I would just like to propose that and put that on the table, that that's the given urgency. Thanks.
Okay. Honorable Deputy Minister, can somebody respond to this lifestyle audit by Honorable Ganjo?
I messed up my screen now. Can you hear me, Chairperson? Chairperson?
Yes, I can.
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Yeah, I've messed up my screen now. I can't see anything, but as long as you can hear me. I think when it comes to that and when it's referred to the Sun Park, the CEO is the relevant person also to respond on that one.
Okay. Thank you very much. We can definitely look at that. On top of the integrity polygraphy that we are doing, we can just look at that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think now, without wasting any time, let's move to the next presentation about wildlife economy.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, EGC and colleagues. I hope I'm audible.
Yes,
am I audible?
You are audible.
Please. All right, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. All right, thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Members. I will try to be brief, as some of the slides were really meant for more information. They will seem to be more fitting. This is a presentation on wildlife economy. As we can see, the members will recall that as way back as 2014, we had a presidentially driven program, which was Operation Pakisa, which started with the oceans economy. And then in 2015, we moved to biodiversity economy. And this program was born out of that. And we focused merely here on wildlife economy, where we are looking at redressing the historical exclusion of black people, women and youth in this particular sector. So we achieved this by simply making sure that the people that were excluded have access to heads of game as a startup game for them, as well as infrastructure to actually accommodate that game. Next slide. The wildlife economy for Sun Park is really standing on two legs first. We first have what we call wildlife donation, and this is specifically directed to communities. So those communities who have game reserves that are ready in terms of infrastructure and the criteria that I'm going to talk to next. They will receive a game that's donated, and also with the wildlife loans, where we sign a custodianship agreement with individual entrepreneurs that are involved in the sector. So when it's an individual entrepreneur, it's a game loan. When it's a community, it becomes a donation. Thank you. Next slide. This is the governance process that we normally follow. We will do an advert where we will advertise the opportunities that have been identified, where people can actually apply to Sandpark for game loans or game donations. And we also go out to communities and we identify communities assisted mainly by your traditional authorities, your local municipalities and so on, and assist to the communities. Because for communities, we don't really necessarily want them to follow the advert route, but we want them to get to a stage when they are ready, they can then write to them and request for support. And we do check compliance, and we form technical teams that do a physical assessment properties, and the process will then, those that qualify will be recommended to the Sandpark executive, and then they will be recommended to the board, and the implementation process will start where we do capturing and translocation. Next slide. This is the assessment criteria that we follow. Mainly, the property becomes very important in terms of suitability, that is in terms of the vegetation in the property itself, in terms of the range and the distribution of wildlife, in terms of the management history of that area, as well as doing some ground checks, as we know that we can only donate to South African citizens, so to make sure of that. And also we have to make sure of the ownership and avoid things like people with criminal records or people that are planting. So these are the assessments and the background checks that we do. Next slide. When we started as early as before 2017, this is just after the biodiversity economy led, we started by doing donations to several community projects. Komanisen was one of them, where we went with the minister at that time and donated over 400 animals to this community game reserve in Northern Cape to the value of just over 1 million rand. We also donated to a community in Limpopo about 50 animals, and also to the Masila village community, where we gave them high value species in terms of five buffaloes that they requested too. We also at that stage started putting aside some packages when we have auctions to make sure that we have set aside packages for people to be able to access that in our auctions, so that they can bid with your normal game farmers that have been in the sector. But we have ring-fenced animals that were for emerging game farmers. Thank you. Next slide. And when we started with what we call window one, which was after our 2017, this is when we started advertising, and we really had a good response from a number of different emerging game farmers and community game farms. But at this stage, we could only select 9 applicants that became successful and were recommended to the board with one community game farm. And we donated in that first window 957 animals, those were 8 different species, to the value of just over 8 million rand. And we did the whole capture and the translocation and delivery of game to those particular communities. Thank you. Next slide. We've learned some lessons as we were going along with this. We realized, for instance, that when it comes to community game reserves, most of them are under the management of CPAs, because it's mainly restituted land, and then the governance structures were actually very weak, so we had to even go back to the drawing board and work with the department to actually establish training toolkits and training programs to strengthen governing structures. And we also realized the impact caused by your health restrictions as far as the regulations. So we have to partner and collaborate with the Department of Agriculture. We have to look at other issues which talk to unrealistic expectations. Because some people thought you could just request animals, slaughter them, sell the meat, and come and ask for more animals. So we have to address all of those issues. Thank you. Next slide. And then as we learn, as we are moving forward, we also recognize some of the lack of the technical management skills. This really required us to partner with the relevant departments that could help us on this. And as well as when we look at the request, the list of animals that people were requesting, we realized that bias towards those charismatic species where people were just looking for roan or sable or buffalo and were not really keen on your normal end game. So we had to deal with all these kinds of challenges and making sure that we educate people, we involve people in terms of training programs that we provide in partnership with the department. Thank you. Next slide. Then we started what we are busy now implementing, which we call Window 2. We are busy with that right now. We received about 52 applications in this current window, where after assessing about 40 farms with about 4 different teams of 10 special teams from around the country in CELPAS that were doing assessments, 21 applications have been recommended and approved by CELPAS board. And in this particular window, we were specifically wanting to make sure that we increase the number of your black female game farmers. So we are so proud now to be standing at 5 women emerging game farmers that have been approved. One of them is coming from the first window, and 4 are new ones that are starting in this current window. We also have 7 local communities that have been approved. This means they are game ready with all the fences and the water infrastructure and everything ready for them to receive the game. And if we can go to the next slide, and then see the number of animals that have requested, that people requested just over 4,000 animals from us in this current window, but we approved to allocate 3,022 animals, which are 12 different species, and that's to a value of just close to 13 million rand. And the capture and translocation cost is estimated at about 8 million. So we are looking forward to be implementing this. We've already, out of these 3,000 species that is approved, we have delivered just over 400 so far. So we are busy with the capturing and the translocation delivery of these animals as we speak. There are other wildlife economic activities that are not related to game. And these will be the kind of natural resources that people will be requesting us for. So we have permitting systems where people can collect things like your touch grass harvesting, mupani worms, or sour fig in the case of Agalas National Park and the parks in the Cape. And we also involved in terms of developing local communities, especially when it comes to crafters, and train them in partnership with private sector so that we provide that access to market, as we have done with just the 10 that have been trained around Kruger National Park, and now their crafts are displayed in our new Kruger Shanati curio shop, which the committee will visit, I'm sure, when they visit KNP. Next slide. Yes, Chai, we will notice that there's a whole myriad of economic opportunities in and around Kruger National Park. I will think we can go to the next slide. Just to look at the list of different, let's take the next slide, we can see the key and anchor programs in terms of opportunities in and around the park. If we look at the inclusion of new community areas into greater conservation estates, that on its own provides opportunities, especially for communities, because the land of the communities outside of the protected area, it is valued at almost 0 rands per hectare. But once we include it into the national park, the Kruger National Park, then the value triples immediately, because now then the communities could build lodges and be involved in the wildlife economy, as we will see the example that I'm citing in the next slide. If you may take the next slide. Yes, this is the example, for instance, in Kichana Pevula, which is a communal land north of the Shangoni Gate area, and this is in the Vembe District Municipality. Here we are including 2,500 hectares. We are fencing it. The project is ongoing as we speak. We are not going to drop the fence immediately, but we are already fencing this area with the support that we received from the department. And this is one of our wildlife economy projects. And the next one, the next slide, this is Yomzuli community. This is already fenced inside the national park, though their particular area is not proclaimed the national park as yet. But they are already inside the national park. They already are operating a tourist lodge, which is concessioned to the community, and the community is already benefiting. And we are still working with the community in terms of finalizing some of the access road issues and some of the other opportunities that they could explore in this area. Next one. This is the Mchechane one. This is your between Manelane and the Crocodile Bridge gate. It's also a communally owned area, and also the plans are to include and fence it in to Kruger National Park to unlock those of economic opportunities in that area. Next slide. Now, if we look at future considerations, I couldn't mention all the plans that we have in terms of inclusion of land into the national park, but these are the ones that are on the pipeline that we are still busy negotiating with Amakosi communities in terms of the projects that they want to develop in that area. Some of them, like the Masachi community, the other departments, like Department of Tourism, has already built a five-star lodge in the area. They already have partners in terms of private sector to partner with them. Now they come back and negotiate with us in terms of access into Kruger National Park. So they are all in different states of development. Thank you, sir. Next slide. Now, if we look at this ANCHOR programs, wildlife economy is one of our main ANCHOR programs. So it includes the donation of game, as I've mentioned. It includes incorporating community areas into the park. It includes meat processing facilities. We do have our own abattoir in Kruger, which we use for management purposes, and we are developing a business plan to actually see how can the communities actually access and use this abattoir. We're also talking to other departments to develop more abattoirs and mobile abattoirs outside of the national park, but within the buffer area where the communities can use it. Looking at jobs, we're looking at even supporting communities in terms of managing their own livestock and all the other projects that we have, and some of them include sponsored projects like your DEF 6 and 7 projects. DEF 6 are being implemented right now, and DEF 7 is in the planning stages, which we are planning to implement in this area. And the next slide. So diversity economy is really manifesting itself in two areas here, where we look at this Association of Private Nature Reserves, the APNR. These are the people that have been established, that have been really doing business and benefiting from Kruger National Park. This these are your mainly white-owned private nature reserves. And if you look on the other side, this is where we are trying to say we partner with the experienced nature reserves to make sure that our communities will benefit and there will be spin-offs, at the same time creating new opportunities for those areas that are also closer to the park so they can benefit just like the others. And then inside the park itself, we create opportunities like the development of meat processing plants and keep the making sure that we can did the motions like where we are not allowed to take the meat out of the park by saying let's create a cooking facility, because when the meat is cooked and or is tinned, then it can be taken out of the park. So we're looking at all those different opportunities. Thank you. Next slide. And then we're looking at the expanded public works program as part of our wildlife economy, where we focus on job creating specifically for youth, women, and people with disability in and around KNP. We've got different intervention programs, which include the 45 environmental monitors, which specializes on the fence stewardship program, where they are not just monitoring the fence. They are also working as community ambassadors, where they are bringing awareness in terms of the biodiversity economy to their communities. We are looking at the program like the Department of Tourism's own program of the monitors. We've got about hundreds of them in and around Kruger, and some of them we deploy in community reserves and neighboring reserves. We manage them on behalf of the department. The next one. And then we also have the waste economy program, where we are establishing recycling establishments in and around the national park. There's one that is functioning right now at Lupisi in Lilydale, and there are some that are still being planned, which employs a local community. And then I think that will be the last slide. We can check the next slide, Chair. Okay, yes, tourism, I spoke to this one, where we are dropping fences and making sure that the communities are benefiting from tourism sector by being included in the park. Next slide. Yes. Thank you, Chair. That would be the last one.
Thank you very much. And honorable members, now we are running out of time. So we'll left me to the time of questions. I can take some hands. Any takers? Yes, Honorable Phillips, you are number one. Honorable Singh, number two. Can we get Honorable Phillips?
Thank you, Chair. I just would like to know, of the rhino that have so far been given away or lent, how many in percentage-wise are still alive? Again, percentage-wise, how many have been dehorned, and are those horns accounted for? And then my next question is it economical to gift or lend out 12.5 million rand worth of game, and it cost us 8.5 million rand to relocate them? I had one more question. I just want to find where I wrote it down. I'll leave it there. I can't remember what my last question was. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay. Honorable Singh.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Two quick questions. Thank you for the presentation. I just want to know if the presenter is aware of how many public-private partnerships there are, even if it's not with Sandpark, but with private game farming industry. And can he, you know, give us any notable successes of these PPPs? And even with Sandparks, these game farms that are established for communities, is there any blue chip that he can point us to say, well, this one has succeeded very well and they're making good profits and good management, etc. And to what extent are financial injections, because you spoke about loans, to what extent, how much more or less are the average loans and are they repayable and under what terms? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I can see the comment by Honorable Brumbata saying presentation on this wildlife economy is very clear. That's what Honorable Mbata. So we noted your comments. Can we get responses?
Chair, with your permission, Dr. Walam Kefe, representing head of socio-economic transformation in SANPAS. Chair, on the Honorable Phillips about the home, the rhinos, that Sam will come in, Chair, and tell roughly the numbers. And also, Chair, the horns are accounted for. I think Francis does do a decent visit and make sure that the facilities are stable. Therefore, there's a process of making sure that the horns are safe and accounted for. On the PPPs, all of the thing, we are in window two. What we did in, on each window, as you can see, we are assessing habitat stability, viability, and saturity. I think your question, in the next stage, we can check with these recipients. They can come themselves and say they are making money or not. But because we're starting, we can't speak for them now, but the question is relevant moving forward to say, is this thing working? We're also engaging the department to say delivery alone is enough. There should be what we call post-delivery support, where is coupled with the youth empowerment. We can train the youth members on game ranching. They can go and inspect the farm, come and give a report, but it becomes a youth program for employment and capacity building. We're discussing that with the DTG. The last one, Honorable Singh, was, I think I missed it, Chair. The meat dotting it down. There was another comment you have made.
Yes,
that
on financial allocations, the average financial allocations, and are they repayable? Thank you, Chair.
Come again, Chair.
Honorable Singh.
No, financial allocations, you refer to financial allocations. You know, what is the nature of financial allocations? You know, the average finances that are made available and are repayable and what are the terms? If there are financial allocations other than wildlife only.
We only counting wildlife, not any other allocations. But we're expecting in future what you call paying them back, they empower next door neighbor, the next neighbor, so that at the end of the day, it becomes a viable program in terms of emerging game farmers. Therefore, we are not providing money, we are providing only animals. The issue of costs to translocate, because it's a government program, we, even ourselves as SANPAS, we are engaging the department to try and take care of that part of translocating. We do it ourselves because we want professionalism. We don't want to just outsource this thing and leave it to someone. And then animals die in trucks because of dehydration, because of malnutrition. We want to make sure that it's done properly at the initial stages. But in future, Chair, we might avoid this cost by getting private sector involved in terms of deliveries. But for now, we want to start it correct, because if we just leave it to anyone, animals might die during cover and during translocation. Therefore, we're absorbing those costs for now. Let's stand back. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I can see a hand. Honorable Phillips.
Didn't take it down.
Sorry, Chair,
I can take it down.
Oh. Okay, thank you very much. Now, honorable members, I think we have noted areas where there's feedback that is expected in writing. And I think those who are recording will follow up on that. But I think we must formalize these arrangements, even if individual members of the committee are asking questions, they must come to one basket so that we can be able to follow up and check if we have done justice in terms of dealing with those issues. The last one, I think we have noted the issue of overnight visit to Kruger, in permitting and the situation allowing. I think we'll be looking at that. Generally, it was more information sharing. But the concern that was raised by Honorable Singh to say if what we are hearing could be something that is happening, then the whole situation would be different. So I think that calls for focus on implementation of some of this, especially when you start talking about wildlife economy. Then we are beginning to see what contribution we can make as a sector in terms of this reconstruction and development of the economy. So there's a lot of thinking that must get into this area. So generally, I thought I should make those comments, but I know we are having a session in the afternoon. Unless there's something burning, Deputy Minister would want to say before I close.
No, thank you, Chairperson. No, there's nothing that is outstanding that we'd like to say. But let me take this opportunity then and thank yourself, and also thank the honourable members for their understanding with regard to the questions that you could not respond. And indeed, Chairperson, we will then send the responses through your office, where then members will get those responses. And also, let me also then thank the department under the leadership of our DG Chabalala for making members understand that the questions that members ask from the department are a necessity, are things that whether we like it or not, we need to have responses to those questions. They're very important in order for you to do your oversight correctly. And also, we have committed that we will then ask the minister, when time permits, then to brief the portfolio committee with regard to the high-level panel report when the report is early, because the minister did indicate previously that as soon as the report is ready, she will then bring it to the portfolio committee in a way of briefing, that is the resolution, the outcome of that report, and then the committee then will take it from there. From our side, thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to members of Parliament for understanding. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, honourable members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and your team.
Thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.